I'll let you know when it's recording.
We are now recording.
Thank you, Kurt. It is November the 2nd, 9 a.m. We're going to call into session the board technical registration for the state of Arizona. Kurt, could you please do a roll call?
Clinton Campbell. Jeff Gilmore.
Here.
Aaron Green.
Here.
Helma Pack.
Here.
Jennifer Hobit.
Here.
Michael Koleka.
Here.
Colleen Lingard. Clarence McAllister.
Here.
Stephen Noel.
Here.
Stacy Skanky.
Here.
Kent Wilson. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Kirk. Okay, first item on the agenda is the adoption of minutes. As all of our board members had a chance to review this, many of you were not here at the last session. It's not critical that you be here to vote, but it's your choice. You may abstain if you choose. So,
I think they have to abstain.
No, you don't have to abstain for the minutes. You're okay for the minutes.
They weren't here.
Yeah, even if you weren't here
for meeting, you're able to vote on the minutes.
Okay.
So, we got two sets of minutes for September 28th. Can I get a motion?
Chair, I move that we.
This is Clarence McAllister.
Okay, Clarence.
Right.
You want to make the motion? Thank you.
Yeah,
Clarence.
I'd like to move that we approve the most motions for the last two board meetings. This is Clarence McAllister.
Can we do one vote or renew separate?
You can do them together if they're.
I second both.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. We do a roll call, can't we?
You can just do it all in favor for this one.
Everyone in favor of approving the minutes from September the 28th and October 1st, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Very good. This next item is going to be the call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Pursuant to ARS 38431-018, the board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal actions. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. Anybody from the public want to share anything with the board? No one calling in. Okay, thank you. Let's move on. Enforcement matters. Starting with 5A1, this is a resolution for dismissal or closure. Can I get anybody to make a motion on this one? Or are there questions? And so you guys know our new board members, a lot of times you'll see this, and I think we discussed this at our previous session, introductory session. If there are complaints or proposed resolution by dismissal or closure, if there's no question, you guys don't have any concerns about what is shared by staff, then we can go right to a vote.
I did actually have a question.
Certainly.
And this is Aaron Green for those listening. With respect to.
No, this is for 5A1?
Yes, P22013.
Okay, let me start the appropriate discussion with that one. This is involving a respondent, Robbie Marvin, who was a non-registrant. The synopsis of this complaint is on September the 6th, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent and respondent firm advertised the practice of architecture on Craigslist without registration of the board. Okay.
I was reading over this, and I thought perhaps in the interest of clarity, it might be best to consider a letter of concern, given that it appears that the use of the phrase architect in an advertisement does constitute at least a de minimis violation, and I don't think it serves us or the respondent well if, you know, if it were to actually come up again for him to not receive guidance on that issue. So I would suggest a letter of concern.
And just as a reminder, a letter of concern is a non-disciplinary action.
Right.
Oh, it's a non-registrant.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really the one question.
Investigator Larry, would you like to share?
Yeah, so he's a non-registrant, so that's why we went with the recommendation of a dismissal.
Okay.
He did, in communication with him, he did say that for in a good faith will, he would take that architecture ward out of there.
I did see that.
Yeah.
My only concern was, since there was there any follow-up saying, yes, that was in fact a violation, you shouldn't do that in the future?
Actually, the board can't really do that with a non-registrant simply because any determination of whether or not it's a violation would have to be made by the board. Board staff couldn't say, if you do this again, it'll be a violation because they have no means of
making. Could he be directed to the statutes, just as a reminder, without any, just, these are here for your reference?
Certainly, board staff could certainly say, just for your knowledge, here are the board, the statutes and rules are posted on the website, here's the web address. They just have to be careful how far they go, because they can't imply that they believe there's a violation necessarily, because they're not able to make that determination.
Gotcha.
That's only made once something comes up before the board.
Okay. That would be my only suggestion, this matter, is for the board staff to make such a referral. Make such a communication with a link to the appropriate statutes.
Go ahead. I did speak with the architect that he works with when there's architecture needed, and he indicated that he gets calls from this respondent whenever there's architecture involved that needs a register. So I did ask the architect if he was familiar, if respondent was familiar with our rules and statutes, and he indicated that he was. And in addition, he will also hire our engineers if needed for those plans or whatever work he's on.
So then, am I just off base in thinking that even if he's associated with an architect, he would need to? I might just be off base completely then, because my thought was he would need to.
It's a good thought. It's just that we do have the legal aspect that we have to consider, and that's where it kind of moves it around.
Right. My issue isn't so much, now whether or not we would send a letter of concern. I appreciate Scott's comment on that. My issue now is, am I just incorrect in thinking that if this were to come up again, you know, in Scott's opinion, would this constitute a violation since he is in fact associated with an architect?
There are a couple of different aspects of that, and the one thing, I can't actually ever say whether or not anything would constitute a violation, because again, it's always going to be up to the board to interpret their own statutes. I can give some guidance with regards to it, but only the board can look at the specific circumstances in a specific case and determine whether or not there's been a violation.
Past practice would be helpful.
Absolutely. And the board also may want to consider that in some circumstances, with a non-registrant, in a type situation that you're outlining, there may be a question of whether or not a registrant is enabling the practice by a non-registrant. So you may have, in some circumstances, a registrant, for example, simply stamping documents that were not prepared by the registrant or by a notified employee. So there may be other potential investigatory avenues. So it's not always going to be a non-registrant, but with regards to non-registrants, the board is limited by statute to really just a couple of possible causes of action.
You know, I think there have been a pattern of this going on for quite a while. I think that might be something else, but in this case, I think Mr. Marvin was more than willing to modify his website, and he is, by his own acknowledgement, retaining consultants when needed. So,
my only concern was compliance with respect to the future and with respect to advertising. I think my concern's pretty much been addressed at this point.
Okay. Very good. So, did we have a motion? No motion yet.
I would move to dismiss the complaint.
Okay, we have a motion.
I'll second that.
And a second. I'll eventually learn all your names, but we're working on it.
Stacey Skanky making a motion.
Mike Clegg, a second.
Thank you. We have a motion, a second. All those in favor? Can I do this by?
Yes.
All those in favor of dismissing this, please say aye.
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 Anyone in opposition?
Mr. Chair, if I may ask, just for purposes of the audio, Kurt may need to do a roll call of whoever's on the telephone since we don't have
control. Okay. Sorry. Kurt, please.
Clarence McAllister.
Aye.
Thank you.
All right. Motion is passes. Let's move on to 5B1.
Hello, this is Kent Wilson. Just want to let you know that I have joined by phone as well.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson.
Okay, this is item 5B1, case number P21070. We have a recommendation.
Yeah, I move to accept the letter of concern.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second that, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of...
All present in the room.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Clark is here.
Just show it, I'm sorry.
Okay. Mr. Clark, do you want to, there's a motion to approve the letter of concern. Is he on the call? He's here.
Right here.
Do you want to come up and share your position on this?
In what respect, sir?
If you've got questions, this is the time to do it. Otherwise, we're ready to make a vote.
I don't have any questions at this time.
Okay. All those present, everyone in favor of the motion for letter of concern, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed?
Ken?
Aye.
Clarence?
Aye.
Okay, this motion passes. Thanks for coming in, Mr. Clark.
What happens now?
Nothing.
You
get a letter.
There's a letter of concern that should be sent to you.
Okay.
Regarding this situation.
Okay. Sounds good.
But it's non-disciplinary.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. 5C1. This case number P21073 involving respondent Bruce Ensor. He is a structural engineer, registered with a firm and himself here in Arizona that resides in Pennsylvania. The synopsis of this complaint: on April 27, 2021, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, after receiving initial payment to provide signed and sealed structural drawings and calculations packet for the Davis residence in New Arizona, failed to deliver a usable set of signed and sealed structural plans. It is further alleged that the respondent and respondent firm engaged in the practice of engineering without firm registration with the board. Board records show that the respondent's firm registration expired in September 30th, 2015, has not been renewed.
Mr. Chair, I believe at the time this was written, I believe the firm was registered in May of 2021.
Okay.
So there was a 6-year period that the firm was not registered.
Mr. Hansen, are you online?
The attorney is.
James Hansen?
Yeah.
We need Concord.
I can try. I don't see any list of participants.
Good morning, Lane Clem's phone. May I help you?
May I please speak with James Hansen?
Okay, one moment. May I tell him who's calling?
Kurt Winter at the Arizona Board of Technical Registration.
Okay, hang on one moment.
C2 and come back. See if it calls in.
Okay. You want me to hang up?
Able to get Jamie right this moment. Is he expecting this call? Is this a meeting or whatnot? Because I noticed that it says Google Meet when you called in.
It is a meeting, yes.
Okay, so I figure he might be expecting it. Okay, so he's just red right now. I'm trying to get him. He's on the other line. Give me just a moment if you don't mind.
Can you give us a call back? I sent him a
move on to 5C2. This is case number P21049. Involves the respondent, Don Holt, another non-registrant. The synopsis for this complaint: on December 7th, 2020, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, who was not a registered land surveyor, engaged in the practice of land surveying by placing pins on the boundary between a nearby property and the property of the alleger in Pine, Arizona, in an attempt to alter property lines. Okay. Mr. Eby, can you share some background on it? This is kind of involves, I think, some poor communication, but clearly he is not a registrant and was trying to assess some property pins.
And my understanding is we have both the alleger and respondent. I believe that wish to address the board.
Terry, is it Bessie?
Veshi.
Terry Veshi, are you online? Don Holt, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Thanks for calling in, Mr. Holt. Can you share with the board your position on this case?
I did submit a letter. Yeah, and I requested, I was under the impression that I was being investigated for this allegation of placing markers on a boundary line. I'm not guilty of anything. I placed some markers in an approximate location of where a fence was to be built. I had contacted a fence contractor to build a fence, and he was very busy. He didn't know when he would be able to get out to go over the area with me, so I put some wooden stakes out to indicate the approximate location of the fence that he was to build so he could give an appropriate estimate on the cost of building a real fence. And I did this so that he could go by at any time and see where the fence was to be built, see that there was no obstructions or anything to give a more accurate estimate. It was not marking the boundary. It was in close proximity of the boundary, but I was not trying to indicate the boundary. I had obtained a survey map from the county showing where the boundary was, and I had placed those wooden markers on the Adams Family Ranch portion of the property. Well, it ended up that I did have an opportunity. The fence contractor contacted me, and I did meet him at the location. Well, the complainant had removed the wooden markers that I had placed, so I put some metal pins and big nails in the ground with a pink ribbon on it so that the fence contractor could locate the approximate area of the fence. I did meet with the fence contractor and gave him a copy of the survey map provided by the county. And knowing that this person that made the complaint is a very difficult person to deal with and talk to, communicate with, I had made arrangements with a licensed surveyor to come out and verify the boundary properties before the fence was to be made or built. And then the complainant, prior to the licensed surveyor that I had contacted, the complainant contacted another surveyor and had him come out and mark the boundaries, which were in close proximity to the where I had put those pins. She apparently does not accept the surveyor's marks that was placed there by the surveyor that she had hired. She wanted me to pay for the surveyor, which I had reneged on because I felt like it was her obligation if she wanted to have it surveyed, because I had a current survey map provided by the county. Well, ultimately, after the last hearing, the board decided that I was guilty based on lies that she presented. I subsequently, she called me and let me know that the board had found me guilty. To get her off my back, I went ahead and reimbursed her for the $1,500 surveyor fee. And she had claimed that I had removed the fence. Well, the fence that I had removed was an insignificant fence that was actually, it had been, it was a 30-foot fence that I had built several years ago. I'm very familiar with the boundaries there because I ran cattle in that area for a good number of years. I knew where the boundaries were.
Mr. Holmes placed about
a 30-foot section of fence to give me access to a gate to enter and leave the property since I was pulling a tractor-trailer unit with livestock often. The roadway in that area is very narrow, and in order to keep from blocking the roadway, I had installed a gate with about a 30-foot offset or backset to allow me to get off of the roadway.
Mr. Holt, that part of the fence is not really the issue, and I guess I want to clarify, this board is not making a decision. This was given to our enforcement advisory committee members who are surveyors, and it was those committee members that made a decision that you had actually practiced land surveying by placing those pins. So the question is, it's really that one boundary where you're placing the pins and identifying that as the property line. I think that's the issue.
No, I didn't place those pins to identify the property line. I placed the pins to identify for a fence contractor the approximate area of where the fence was to be built. And I provided him with a survey map. It was up to the fence contractor to determine the boundary line. Ultimately, when I met with him, I found out that he had installed that particular boundary line. He had installed a 5-strand barbed wire fence on that property line many years ago.
Right.
So he knew where the property line was, but I had given him a current survey map provided by the county to indicate where the property lines were. I never, ever did any surveying to mark any boundary lines.
Okay, Mr. Holt?
Mr. Holt? Yes?
I need to get this, this back under control. I'd like to bring this up for discussion by the board members, and I'd like to hear from our investigator on what he has discovered, and you'll have a chance to ask some more questions.
Well, if you would just send an investigator up here, it wouldn't take him but a few seconds to realize that I did nothing wrong.
All right, you've had your chance. I think we are relying on our EAC members who have given an opinion, because we only have one land surveyor on our board here, and I think he will have a shared opinion as well. But I'd like to hear from our investigator right now and then open for discussion by the board members. Mr. E?
Okay.
I should mention to the board, because of the alleger in this particular case, Ms. Veshi, isn't present, that once Mr. Holt contacted her about this issue and about resolving it to include paying for the entirety of the survey, which was in fact $1,500, and the fence issue, that she contacted me and asked that the complaint be withdrawn. And I wasn't in a position to be able to do that because frankly, once we open an investigation, it goes before the board, so I conveyed that back to her. But I did, because for some reason, I expected her to participate, and she didn't, but I did want to mention that element of it. However, when it came to the case in terms of what Mr. Holt was involved in, the important element was, in fact, the Enforcement Advisory Committee. And we had assessments conducted, an EAC meeting was recommended, we did convene that, and ultimately that was the conclusion, is that Mr. Holt did in fact engage in land surveying, and that's essentially why we're here tonight. I went ahead with a consent agreement with Mr. Hall. However, he declined to sign it.
Okay, thank you. Members of the board, discussion?
Chair, I have a question.
Certainly.
I'm not a land surveyor, but I find it hard to believe that somebody's considered that he's land surveying by putting stakes in the ground for building a fence. It seems a stretch.
Well, at the same time, the fact that you're putting pins in the ground with flags for the general public, they would assume that that is, in fact, a legal boundary, and if it's not performed appropriately, then I would be concerned.
You mean I couldn't put a flag in my yard at the corner? If I did that, I'd be a land surveyor? I mean, that's the point.
Our monuments are usually rebar.
Right.
Nails are just temporary points, especially with the ribbon. Usually it's for construction.
Right, yeah.
Is what that is. Wood also is used for construction. My feeling on this is that it was not surveying. It was just a handyman out there doing some work for the owner. I would dismiss it.
If I may, this is Ken Wilson. I'm sorry.
I would move to dismiss.
Okay, we have a motion for dismissal.
This is Kent Wilson. I'd second that motion.
Okay. We have several seconds. Kurt, I'll let you choose.
We'll go with Stacy.
So those board members who are present, if you're in favor of the dismissal, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed?
Kent, your vote.
Can I do them?
Yes.
First. All right.
And Clarence?
I vote for the dismissal. Yes.
Okay. I vote no.
I give a nay across the way.
We have one nay. Okay, the
Clarence is a nay.
Clarence is a nay.
We have two nays. Okay, the motion passes. Mr. Holt, thanks for calling in. This case has been dismissed. But you've heard the concerns of the EAC members, and I'm sure you won't be doing too much more land surveying now. But thank you.
I'm sorry. Okay. I can't really hear you very well.
Oh, I'll try and speak up. The case has been dismissed against you by the vote of the board.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you very much. You made the right decision. I guarantee you that.
All right. Thank you for your support. Appreciate that. Well,
thank you.
Chairman, board council has arrived, and they would like us to jump to agenda item 8A.
Okay. This involves an executive session. We need to have a vote to enter into the executive session. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion to go to the executive session.
Okay. Is there a second?
Okay. Chair, if I may, just for clarity for the record, that would be for...
Yeah, Kurt, I have the link for the executive session.
Okay, thank you, Scott. That's going to be for policy matters. I'm 8A. Involving the Mills versus Arizona State Board of Technical Registration.
And that would be for the purpose of discussion or consultation with outside counsel. Would that be correct?
That'd be correct. Thank you. Sure. So we have a motion and a second. All those present in favor, please say aye.
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 Clarence and Ken?
Clarence and Kent, if you would please leave the Google meeting you're in right now and enter into the separate Google meeting for executive session. We'll join you shortly.
Yeah, I do not have the Google meeting for executive session. Can you forward me, Chris, please?
I am doing it right now.
Thank you.
And board members, we're going to need to leave this room and go into the other room.
Right.
I'm going to mute the phone at this time during the executive session. And when the board comes back, I will unmute and we will re-record. I'm going to turn off the recording for the public session.
Have fun.
We are now recording.
Thank you, Kurt. The board attendant registration is back in session. We've just ended an executive session, and I think we're ready for a motion.
I have a motion, Chair.
Mr. Lloyd?
I move that staff direct counsel to proceed to file a response as discussed in our meeting.
Thank you.
To the Superior Court with regards to the Mills case.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion to...
Hold on.
Response. Mr. Harris.
I think he... excuse me. I think he meant the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
Correction.
Excuse me.
We got the corrected motion in there, Kurt. Great, thank you. All those present in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And then we need Clarence. And Clarence, are you on?
Aye.
And Mr. Wilson.
And Mr. Wilson.
Aye. You hear me?
Yes. Mr. Wilson, did you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, we are unanimous.
There's one nay.
Yeah. Are you a nay?
Nay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Harris. Appreciate your input.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the chance to be here with you today.
Thank you. Okay, let's get back to enforcement matters. Let's go to 5C1. Mr. Hansen is present. This is case number P21073. This involves the respondent is Bruce Ensor, who is a PE structural. And we read through the synopsis once. Mr. Hansen is here, who is counsel for Mr. Ensor.
I'm going to call Mr. Ensor right now.
So you're calling. I'll go ahead and do the synopsis again. The board received a complaint alleging the respondent, after receiving initial payment to provide signed and sealed structural drawings and calculations packet for the Davis residence in Dewey, Arizona, failed to deliver a usable set of signed and sealed structural plans. It is further alleged that respondent and respondent firm engaged in the practice of engineering without firm registration with the board. Board's records show that respondent firm's registration lapsed on September the 30th, 2015, and as we understand it, has since been renewed as of 2021. So, Mr. Hansen, is Mr. Ensor online yet? Mr. Ensor, are you online?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, I just got on.
Okay. You've heard the synopsis. I presume you guys have had a chance to review the EAC assessment and this complaint. Mr. Hansen, do you want to start? And we can turn it over to Mr. Ensor.
Yes. Second. And I've told my client that I'll do the bulk of the speaking unless the board has specific questions for him. And we want the board to be able to get all the information that the board would like. But in my opinion, it's a case that's not about any technical violations, and that's not an opinion. There's no alleged technical violations. It's a case about money. So Mr. Ensor was hired, his firm was hired, to prepare some structural drawings for Mr. Davis, who wanted to build a shipping container home. And the record does reflect that Mr. Davis underestimated the amount of work that this was going to take, both at the end of the project when he would have to assemble it himself, and also the information that he would need to get Mr. Ensor so that Mr. Ensor could provide the drawings in a responsible way. So there were some delays in Mr. Davis providing that information, and then Mr. Davis announced that I've sold my house in Phoenix and my wife and I will be moving into a trailer in Dewey, Arizona. So there was a scramble. And there was also just some lack of information that my client was receiving from the homeowner. And it resulted in some tension and also some miscommunications, I believe is fair to say. Well, eventually when Mr. Davis looked at what it was going to take for him to get this thing actually erected once he had the drawings, he sent an email saying, stop work, don't do any more, thank you. My client had already done a great deal of the work, and so naturally sent a bill since the case was closed or the matter was closed. Mr. Davis didn't like the bill and didn't pay it, and eventually the matter was turned over to collections. The current matter before us today was a complaint that was filed after that collections call was made. It was all. This is also a case that's coming after an Attorney General, Pennsylvania Attorney General complaint that Mr. Davis made against my client. So I'm just laying that out so that there's some context, that this is a case that appears to be about money at its heart. I will acknowledge that the firm was not registered here in Arizona. That's a mistake, as I described it in my letter, an administrative lapse. That's already been remedied. The firm is now registered. So we have no excuse for that other than my client was misunderstanding the requirement. He operates out of Pennsylvania and read the rule one way here in Arizona. We apologize for that, but it has been remedied. And I will tell you that one of the documents that I like the most is the letter from Andrew Natupsky, who is on the Enforcement Advisory Committee, that said, in my view, there were no violations of any provisions of the Board's Practice Act. I found no technical deficiencies in the material provided, and thus the case does not warrant any further enforcement action. So we have that. I don't believe that it's reasonable to request an outright dismissal of the entire matter because there was the infraction about the lack of registration for the firm, but neither do I believe it's a case where there needs to be discipline, even to the level of a letter of reprimand. I would propose that if there's going to be any kind of action taken by the board, that it be a letter of concern. It seems like a very perfect case for a letter of concern because we have competing readings of the underlying fact. Mr. Gervasio recommended that some form of action be taken. Mr. Natupsky recommended that the case be dismissed outright. It seems like a letter of concern addresses that perfectly. I also proposed in my letter to Investigator Kramer that my client would help bring this entire matter to an end by agreeing to release the debt on the condition that Mr. Davis doesn't file a lawsuit or something like that. So let's call it a conditional release, meaning if Mr. Davis doesn't sue us for any reason, then we won't pursue that debt anymore. So that's what I propose to the board today, sir.
Okay. Mr. Ensor, do you want to add to that?
No, I think that clarifies the position of myself, and, I don't have anything to add unless there's questions.
I think there are some issues here. Mr. Kramer, I think we want to hear from you as well.
Is he on the line? I don't see Kramer on the line, no.
And Mr. Gary Kramer?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Hi.
Thank you, Kramer.
In reading all the EAC dialogue, there seems to be some indication that Mr. Ensor was recommending that the incomplete plans be submitted for first review without a stamp. And I think that's a problem. So I guess I'd like to hear from Mr. Kramer on this issue. I think there's some others involving the completion of the plans. Mr. Davis instructed Mr. Ensor to complete his engagement last October, but the plans continued to be prepared. Calculations were submitted on June 14th of 2021, along with the bill. So I guess I need to understand the discrepancies there. Mr. Kramer, can you share any enlightenment with the board?
Yes. The EAC agreed that it was a financial issue mainly. Davis did not provide information to help Mr. Ensor, and Mr. Ensor did not provide the plans as he was hired to do. So there was a push and pull there between the two of them, and when Mr. Davis backed out and received a bill, a final bill, that's when the complaint was filed. And so it was, a lot of it was
this money issue. Now, the plans were deficient, if you read Mr. DeRossio's assessment. There were issues in that, on those plans. And that's why in the consent agreement, I threw a $500 fine in there for that, plus the non-registering firm is $250, and that's why I came up with the $750. Can I respond to that?
Okay, Mr. Insor.
The reason the plans were not complete is because we were sharing with the client our progress to show, and we were making progress, and they were submitted without a not for construction, without a seal on the documents, but in the cover letter, which was an email, it said not for construction, is a preliminary for your review. And once he saw that the welding was required to the extent that we were going to have to reinforce the structure because he had large open spaces taking out large portions of walls, he backed out. He panicked. He said, I can't do this. His plan was to serve as his own general contractor and to do the work himself. And that's when he said, I can't do this. We're living on site. Whatever, but we had like 2 days to finish this up and get him 100% set of calculations that he could take to and drawings that he could take to the building department. So at the time we submitted them to Mr. Davis, they were not intended to be constructible. They were not intended to be 100% complete. We went 117% over our budget, and we would have probably had to go to 150 or maybe 200% of the budget to finish this work. However, I felt that we were at a 90% based on conversations and looking at our budget with the design engineers that were working on it, that we were at 90%, so we invoiced that short of asking for additional funds for turning this from, you know, his assistance into a performance specification, which required us to provide additional information on the documents so that during construction, it would have had to been verified by a third party if they so choose, and they could check the structure at that time because he refused to go get an ultrasound gauge. He did not get the information required from the manufacturer. The documentation we used was from an ISO report, which says that you have to have permission from the manufacturer to use this information. So I felt that was the best way possible to get him something that he could construct. However, this was above his head. And he sold his house without my knowledge. He decided not to turn in documentation. Well, and so that took him out of the queue.
Mr. Ansar, this is Jack Gilmore. That's not the issue here right now, I don't think. Did you instruct him to go ahead and submit those plans for review?
Did not. No, I never did that. What I told him, which was a point of confusion, is we could add notes to the drawings instead of a lot of details to shorten our production. And if he got into a problem with the notes that we added, so for example, if I wanted to put a base plate on top of a pier, I could just as easily, say, use a 3/4 inch base plate with 4 bolts, 3/4 inch diameter, embedded 12 inches, and set the, you know, base of the bearing beam on top of that without having to cut sections. He then made a false claim against me and said I was saying we should falsify documents and turn in a fake set of construction documents. That's a complete fabrication of the truth.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, is that not providing an unfinished document for him to turn into the authority without a stamp, without the words, not the construction, and he's telling him that, well, if they have an issue, then we can add this or that to it afterwards?
Right.
I was trying to be helpful with the guy and trying to provide him with the most expeditious way for him to move forward. I in no way tried to deceive him, mislead him. In fact, I went out of my way to help him because he was deficient in providing me the information I required under contract. He's the one that terminated the agreement, and in no way did I tell him that the set of drawings were ready for construction. He said, stop work. I told him we're not done. The cover letter said not for construction. It should have been on the drawings.
Mr. Ensor, this is Jack Gilmore. I'd like to open up for discussion with the board members now. And if you got questions, they can ask you, or Mr. Hance can interject later. So, board members, any discussion on this?
I have something, but I've been chatty so far, so I was going to let someone else go first.
I can't really hear what that person said.
I apologize. This is Board Member Green. I was making a joke about me talking too much today. And this might be a counsel for either you, Mr. Enzer, or for counsel. I'm looking at the summary of the interview in which you said about the set of plans that were sealed and sent to our investigator. You said that you panicked and thought maybe you should seal the plans if you're publishing them for the board. Is that still your explanation for sending that set of plans?
Well, you know, they complained that I hadn't sealed the plans or didn't have a construction, and I went ahead and put the seal on there thinking, well, at least it has to have my name and my license number on there. But that was basically to appease Mr. Kramer. I didn't know this process. I've never had this in 32 years or 33 years of practice. I've never had a situation like this because, if anything, I'm overly conservative relative to my engineering and design practice. So, yeah, I didn't think it through, and then, you know, they were saying, well, you shouldn't have put your seal on it. Well, then the other guy's like, well, you had to have a seal in there to identify his license number. You know, so that was during a period of where I was under investigation, and, you know, they were asking me, you know, why didn't you put your seal on? It should have said, you know, not for construction, and, you know, if my seal was on there, it still represents my work and released under my, you know, authority. But when we sent it to the customer, I did not mislead the customer that these are 100%. They were nowhere near 100%. They were, you know, under my, they were, you know, 90% at most. And that's what we billed for based on the amount of effort we put into it. And we had fully intended to complete the job. And within the 2 days we had left, that was certainly reasonable to do that, but we dropped everything off the schedule and focused on his project because I empathized with him. He told me like 2 weeks before he was going to get kicked off the site or get a permit. And I still, to this day, do not believe he has a permit because when I called the building department, he still had not pulled a permit.
Mr. Enzer,
during the investigation.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Enzer, there are the EAC, you know, a committee of your peers met and made a decision that there was two violations. One you resolved with the registration of the
firm. Who's talking here?
This is Jack Gilmore, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Chair. But the first violation dealt with the respondent was engaged in misrepresentation or concealment of material facts in providing professional service to the public. So that's the decision of our EAC committee, and that's kind of the basis that we use for making the decision. Concealment involved.
Well, nobody ever explained that to me. In fact, during the investigation, I asked Mr. Kramer to address that to me and explain exactly how they felt I misled them or misrepresented them, and he said, hold on a second. We're going to get to that. And then from there, I never was, you know, responded to on that request. And then they went into executive session, and I was kept from speaking. I never got to defend myself on that issue or get a full explanation as to where the violation occurred relative to misrepresentation. The initial letter was sent out and said I committed a fraud. In my opinion, both of those are criminal acts. And in no way did I mislead this guy, and in no way did I commit a fraud.
Mr. Enzer, have you read the consent agreement, the proposed consent agreement?
I have.
Item 4, August 12, 2021, the Enforcement Advisory Committee was convened at the board office to review the complaint. The respondent participated telephonically after reviewing the alleger. Interviewing the alleger and respondent, and considering the evidence presented in this case, the committee found the respondent engaged in misrepresentation or concealment of material facts in providing professional service to the public. The alleger notified the respondent of the 90-day deadline approaching this to submit plans. So I think that's what the committee was concerned about, was that you were given a schedule and poor communication being what it is, he ran into a deadline problem. And then you continued to work on the project after you were told to stop to complete your calculations 8 months later.
That's not true. We stopped the day that he told us stop. Why would I continue to work on a job I was in over my head financially with relative to our fixed budget? Why would I do that?
The only thing
that I did was when Doug Kramer asked me for documentation on the seismic, I submitted that. When I had asked for, why aren't these plans sealed, I submitted that. But that wasn't to misrepresent anything. Those things were all done after the communication with Doug Kramer had ceased, and he had terminated the contract early based on our verbal communication to that date.
I was reflecting on dialogue that came from Mr. Gervasio, indicating that a lot of the structural calculations are completed in May, about half of them. So that's where my question came about. And the fact these final plans were submitted 8 months after you were told not to proceed. Any more discussion by the board members? Mr. Hansen?
Those were submitted to the investigator, right?
Mr. Ansor, we've got Mr. Hansen's got the floor.
So my client has very strong feelings about the allegation about misrepresentation in particular and doesn't believe that he did anything that rises to the level of misrepresentation or concealment of material facts. A sign that he does not believe that he did anything wrong was that he initiated a collection effort against Mr. Davis, which would be foolhardy if he thought that he would be caught for some misdeed as that case developed and facts came to light. I've spoken to my client about the need for the appearance of propriety in future conduct. He's already taken before consulting with counsel the issue about the firm not being registered. I had proposed something like a letter of concern. We're also willing to discuss other terms that are within this consent order and agree to those, but I'm letting the board know it's this allegation about the misrepresentation or concealment of material facts that's the sticking point here. And I'm hopeful that we can get this case resolved, but resolution that requires my client to admit to something that he did not do and certainly does not believe that he did is going to be very difficult.
Mr. Kramer, you were at that EAC meeting. Can you share any insight on that issue?
I was there. Issue of what? I'm sorry, I didn't.
Of the concealment of material facts. Because that's what the EAC decided. There are three violations referenced, and two of them were unsubstantiated, and the third one was, which is this concealment of material facts.
So the concealment had to deal with the some work that was done after the Mr. Infra was told that to drop the project. I did talk to the lady who Mr. Davis talked to on the internet at Mr. Infra's office that said that they could do the project, said that they'd done many in the past, but it came down when I finally got down to the truth of the matter. She said, or Mr. Ansor said, I can't remember which one, that they had done one project in the past, and it was a much different design than the one they were working on for Mr. Davis.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question for
Mr. Scott, Green.
Actually.
Just speak really loud.
I apologize. question for counsel, for our counsel, Scott. Theoretically, if we were to find that Mr. Ensor applied a seal when he shouldn't have, we generally can craft a consent agreement that Mr. Ensor would admit to a violation of a regulation, right? And I'm thinking specifically of R43304D concerning the use of seals. Theoretically, we could today direct staff to go back and draft a consent agreement that included that violation, correct?
Certainly. I mean, the board can offer whatever consent offer they would like to the registrant, whether or not the registrant would take it, I couldn't say, but the board could either make an offer or they could determine something today with Registrant's counsel. In terms of crafting a consent agreement, the board has a great deal of flexibility because the parties are agreeing to the terms of the agreement. Although obviously it would have to be something within our statutes, but they do have a great deal of flexibility that way, quite often with crafting the findings of fact as well, is an area that there's a good deal of flexibility.
So your question, Mr. Green, involves the stamp? Using the stamp?
I think the major sticking point for me is his submission of stamp documents to the board that weren't complete. In my view, I think that does violate regulation R43304D. I'm not sure what the thought of the rest of the board is concerning concealment.
Can I address that?
Wait a minute.
Mr. Enzer, let him speak, please. This is your attorney.
I was just thinking, I'm not sure what the position of the rest of the board is concerning concealment, but if I wanted to throw out there, if the board was inclined to do something different, that might be an avenue we could go down as well, is an admission of a violation of that regulation.
I think that gets into an interpretation about completeness that this board's probably not in a position to do. Because plans get submitted for a first review with a stamp, and red lines come back. So it's a judgment as to completion.
Well, I would say, I think the issue here is those plans were never submitted to any approving body or the client with a stamp, but they were submitted to our investigator with a stamp, and the explanation we get is that he panicked. That's the issue I have with this.
Wait, but I'm not sure if that rises to a level of a violation, though, Scott.
Well, that's going to be a matter for the board to interpret their statutes. I can't tell the board whether this would constitute a violation of something. The board has to interpret their statutes.
And I think the issue here is if the rest of the board is inclined to resolve this today for a consent agreement, my suggestion would be that this would be an alternative route that we could go down.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Reed. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Wait a minute. We'll get back to you.
I've got a question on the EAC. We had two reviewers, and they had really different reviews. And I would even consider sending it back to EAC for review and have three different reviewers to see if we can straighten some of this out, because it's hard for me to believe they'd be so far off from the same review.
Okay. Yeah, that's certainly an option. Any issue with that?
No, that's perfectly within the board's point of view.
Because I think the question here is was the material misrepresentation? So Mr. Boyd is suggesting that this go back to the EAC committee. Maybe we find some different structurals to review this and see if they have a similar opinion or a different one, and then it can come back to the board for final resolution. Does that have genuine? Okay.
That would help resolve that's where I'm stuck on, is kind of the two different assessments of kind of which one does it go. That would help.
My thought on it is that I would agree with Gervasio that there was some misrepresentation. What really annoyed me was reading the contract. That kind of cemented that deal. And if he had a presence in the state, could he have gone to those storage containers and himself determine the information he needed?
Can I answer that?
Sure.
Mr. Ensor?
We have engineers licensed under Arizona under contract as a 1099 subconsultant, and we offered that service to Mr. Davis, and he refused it because of cost. I then said, well, you can buy electronic ultrasonic gauge and give me some dimensions, and he did not want to pay for that.
Okay.
I even offered to, I think, maybe ship mine out there so he could use it and then ship it back.
Mr. Ensor, hold on,
at
please.
Each point.
Hold on, please.
Yeah, to me, that should have been included. The way this project has transpired from the beginning to this moment. You know, I just don't see the professionalism in it. And I think you should have been in the state looking at the containers, or someone sent to look at the information. It's not something you can expect the client to go to some other foreign country to find out the specs for this stuff. I feel it.
We do a lot of projects around the world and never have an on-site presence.
But you're not getting the information, and that's what I also see in a lot of the documentation.
Mr. Enger, this is your attorney. I'm sorry, what's that? I'm going to advise that you just stay quiet and let the board members talk.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
If I may, it might be appropriate if the board members are considering sending this back for another EAC to look at, if there's specific information board members want, it might be good for the board members to maybe give direction to the investigator while he's on the line, and specific board members have questions about.
And also, Mr. Chair, could we hear from our enforcement manager, Mr. Parlin?
Ms. Parlin?
Yeah, I just wanted to touch a little bit on the procedure our investigators use when it comes to EAC. I mean, the two written assessments that were received are the initial assessments that the investigative staff seeks for possible violations of a technical nature. So that drives whether or not the committee is assembled for a full meeting. And whenever we see two assessments that differ, if there is one recommendation out of those two, that the matter gets investigated further, and an EAC meeting is recommended, that's what staff does, and that's what staff did in this case. So when the EAC committee met, they looked at three potential violations that were derived from the assessments themselves. And of the three potential violations, they found two not to be substantiated, but they unanimously agreed on the violation concerning misrepresentation. So in essence, you had two assessments. They did say two different things. However, that would prompt staff to conduct this meeting and then review all the evidence, conduct the interviews with the respondent, the alleger, any witnesses, and make their finding. And that's what happened in this case. And that is our procedure. That's how things typically go. So I just wanted to bring that up.
It's a pleasure of the board at this point. We can recommend going back to the EAC, but I think we need to give them some direction on what kind of research to do, or we can go ahead and make a motion to send this consent agreement for signature as is, or with modifications. So that's our choice. Is there more discussion that you guys want to pursue?
I'm just wondering, just going to throw it out there, what the board thinks of just doing like a letter of reprimand. Because I just felt like the consent order as is, I feel like it's a little much. But I feel like a letter of reprimand, if I'm understanding correctly, is a little more than, just like a letter of concern, but then it's not this full kind of outline of actions.
And everything else within the consent agreement would stay in place?
Mr. Chair, just for the benefit of the new members, essentially a letter of reprimand is simply a disciplinary version of a letter of concern, so they're just on exactly opposite sides of the line.
Yeah, and I guess my assessment of it is kind of somewhat of like that's a middle road, is kind of how I'm viewing it. But obviously, I don't know where everyone else's minds are at.
Well, right now the consent agreement does include a letter of reprimand.
Yeah, but I would say that would be the sole letter of reprimand.
Administrative penalty to stay and cost investigation to stay?
No. Letter of reprimand.
And I would say that his issue is also with some of that language was in the conclusions law or findings of fact. Is that correct, Mr. Hanson?
That's correct. And I don't mean to seem like a dirty lawyer, but I'm trying to make a deal happen so this can be a result for everybody. And I'm trying to show you my cards that it's this 301-2 that's giving rise to the misrepresentation or concealment of material facts. A registrant shall not engage in fraud, deceit, misrepresentation, or concealment of material facts in advertising. When I read that, my lawyer alarms start ringing. Fraud is a very big deal. If I make a mistake and don't tell a client about some sort of deadline, that's a mistake. And to be told that it falls under the statute that fraud lives in, it would be a lot for me as a professional to agree to. And what I'm trying to signal is that I've got a client who understands that this did not go the way that it should have. It didn't go the way that I want it to look. But I don't think that I can ask him to admit to a statute that's got fraud in it or that describes it as misrepresentation.
Well, I'd be willing to water down that part, but I don't know. I'm not too thrilled with what I've read there.
I believe he wants us to call him back. I'm sorry, my client dropped off the line.
Oh, Kurt, you're calling back. Thank you.
You email me, I dropped.
My main concern is if we do move it to the level of a letter of reprimand and we don't even have consensus on whether there was misrepresentation, I think we need an understanding of whether this did rise to that level to be able to adequately address it through a letter of reprimand or a consent agreement or whatever it may be.
Well, as Mr. Parlin said, that's why we rely so heavily on our EAC members. They are structural engineers, and they've reviewed the documents, the contracts, emails, all the dialogue, and they dismissed two of the violations but kept this third one, and it was a unanimous decision. So I'm inclined to accept the EAC committee recommendation, but there's other elements of this conclusion that we might be able to water down. I'm not sure what that would be yet, but that's my inclination to accept the EAC recommendation. They did let two of those go.
Both the reviewers agreed on the misrepresentation portion of it.
All three. It was all three votes.
Yeah. The only difference was the severity level. Mr. Gervasio was 5, and Mr. Sturge and Mr. Stevenson were 1. But they all still substantiated it.
It was substantiated. And I saw that in the documentation myself.
That's quite all right, Mr. Chair. I just want to say, for the benefit of the board members, one thing to keep in mind when analyzing AACR 430-301-2 is that what the respondent and his attorney are talking about entirely comes down to intent. It's really that's going to be the ultimate question that the board's going to need to look at with this. Again, I can't interpret it for the board, but really this is going to come down to what the board believes was the intent and whether there was an intent with this.
Thank you.
And my position on that, there was. Now, my position is to either accept the consent order or revoke his license. I found it annoying, especially when I read the contract. I mean, the customer has no chance.
Okay.
I'm unfamiliar, but this is Board Member Green again. I'm not quite sure what statute or reg would, that sounds like an issue of contract that Board Member Hack is discussing. That doesn't really sound like something that falls within our purview.
That could be a recommendation by a board member, certainly, to revoke a license, but there has to be just cause, obviously.
Right, I was talking about, I was concerning the predicate for what Mr. Hack was saying,
well,
his annoyance at the contract.
The contract is dictating how the project will begin and end, and there's no wiggle room for the client in that contract. And for things taking as long as it did, is in the contract that gives the respondent the ability to do so. So it's clearly set up.
The client signed the contract, so.
He didn't sign it. But there's enough information to show he was in agreement with it by payment. So I guess you could say it was a signed contract. I did not see one in there, but he did send money.
I think you're right, it wasn't signed, but there was acceptance.
But still, the language in the contract and how this thing played out The respondent was completely protected for the whole length of time. And that's what I'm looking at. You got to take them all into consideration.
I suppose my recommendation is if we're going to refer back to the EAC, I would just add an additional consideration. I would ask them to determine whether or not, based on their practice and policy, whether or not the submission to our investigator was a violation of the use of seals regulation. That would be the only thing I had. But otherwise, I would suggest referring back to the EAC.
Yeah, for the seals, I don't see it really as an issue.
Yeah.
There's much bigger things there.
Well, Mr. Reed, do you want to make that a motion?
Yes, I'll make that a motion. I move that we refer this matter back to the EAC for determination of misrepresentation to the client and a determination of whether or not the respondent violated R-430-304 concerning the use of seals.
Okay. We have a motion by Mr. Green to return this to the EAC committee for additional review. Is there a second?
I'll second that, Chair.
Okay. We have a motion and a second by Mr. Boyd. Can we do a roll call, Kurt, on this one?
Can I ask a question before we roll call? Did we want to charge the EAC with specific detailed instructions for the investigation?
The board could actually do that through direction after the motion. If it goes back to the EAC, the board could give direction.
I guess I should ask, did I unduly constrain what we're sending back for the body?
I thought that was in the motion.
No, it was fine.
Okay.
Jack Gilmore?
Nay.
Aaron Green?
Aye.
Nay.
Jennifer Hovick?
Aye.
Michael Kaleka?
Nay.
Clarence McAllister?
No. Aye.
Stephen Noel?
Aye.
Stacy Skanky?
Nay.
Kent Wilson?
Aye.
Kurt? Yes.
So it's 5-4.
5-4, and the motion is carried.
The motion is carried. Mr. Hansen, Mr. Ensor, there is a vote and a recommendation of this being sent back to the Enforcement Advisory Committee for additional consideration, and then it'll come back to the board. So we'll have to keep you informed, and staff will let you know when that EAC meeting is scheduled. Thank you for coming in.
Thank
you. Chair, is the emphasis as noted in the that misrepresentation and use of the seal is what the board asked me for?
We add that now or later?
The board, right now the board can give any direction to the investigator regarding anything specific that you'd like to know more about or any direction to the investigator.
I'm assuming we'll have potentially three separate structural engineers. Are we going to have an overlap here with any of these?
All fresh.
We have to find new ones. If you're sending it back for a new EAC review, we have to find new structural engineers.
Okay. Or an architect could participate in this?
Yes. I would think so.
As long as we have two structurals sent back, and we need at least two structurals.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. I think this needs to go back to the EAC committee, and they need to, I suppose, analyze what was initially agreed upon in the contract. I'm curious about the dates, what occurred prior to the decision to terminate the relationship, and what transpired afterwards. The use of the seal, or not use of the seal in this case, where it should have at least been plan submitted, not for construction. Any other issues that we need to add to this?
I would say my concern specifically was respect to the seal designs that were submitted to our investigator. That was my main concern.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that's part of your motion. Right, so.
You know, also, what about the container as to who should have provided the information on it? Client or?
Yeah, that gets to be a contractual thing, I think, between the client and the consultant.
Think the client should have provided
it? We can ask the AC, but yeah, I think that's going to be a tricky one.
Yeah.
And it should have been. I mean, the instructional engineer should be looking at those items, but who determines? Is that the consultant? It should come from the recommendation of the structural engineer to do the analysis, but in this case, it sounds like Mr. Ensor went back to Mr. Davis and said, you need to do that for us.
Yeah.
He's not really qualified to do that for us, but Mr. Ensor made the motion or made the offer, and Mr. Davis refused it. So that's kind of a...
Can I answer to that?
No, I think we're done.
We're done.
Thank you for calling in, Mr. Hansen.
Thank you for having us.
If there's questions, please get back to our staff.
All right. Thank you all for your consideration.
Okay, let's...
I'm getting really far.
So we're doing. Okay, Mr. I think we're on to 5C3. Do we need to take a? You guys here, board members, you ready for a break? You need a 5 minute break.
I will be out for about an hour. I've got a work calling into Jumpboard.
Okay, let the record show that we're losing a board member for about an hour. We still have quorum. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay, 5C. 3. This is case number P21072, involving Monica Acuna Arizmendi. I'm going to butcher that name.
This is Bruce Ensor. Can I disconnect now?
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
The synopsis of this complaint: on April 28, 2021, board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after completing a percolation test at 1713 Camino Herrera in Rio Rico Villas without registration with the board, fraudulently applied the PE seal of Reed Dalvik to the percolation test application, which was submitted to Santa Cruz County on or about February 18, 2021. It is further alleged that respondent prepared numerous legal descriptions, records of survey, and boundary surveys for lots located in Santa Cruz County between October of 2019 and December of 2020 without registration with the board, and fraudulently applied the RLS seal of Reed Dalvik to professional documents associated with these land surveys projects. Online, we have Ms. Arizmendi, can you correct me on how to pronounce your name? Are you online? Monica? Craig Klein, respondent's attorney, are you online? Will you show, Kurt?
I don't see anybody. I wasn't provided. Did they indicate, Greg, that they wanted to be on this call?
With respect to the attorney, he was going either way with it. However, Ms. Arizmendi herself was interested in participating virtually, so that was her inclination.
Do you have a phone number for her, Kurt?
I do not have a phone number for her.
If we don't have phone numbers for either, then I think we have to proceed.
Well, it would be up to the board's discretion whether to proceed now or whether to attempt to get in contact with him. You could table it for now, or you could, the board has flexibility.
Greg, do you have phone numbers for these individuals?
I spoke with her attorney rather than with her directly because she had counsel. So at no time did I have a phone number for her directly. Board records wouldn't reflect that, I'm sure, though. I'm sure we have it, but I'd have to research it.
Have they been responsive to the other investigations?
Jack, do you want to see if Greg can get a hold
of
the
other? Yeah, if you would, could you give them a call so we can find them, and we'll proceed on to 5D1 and come back. Thank you, Ms. Green. Okay, let's move on to 5D1. Mr. Skulski, are you online? Brandon Skulski?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. This is case number P22006 involving Brandon Skulski, civil engineer. Synopsis of the complaint: on July 9, 2021, the board received respondent's renewal application for his PE registration. The application was marked yes for having been convicted of a felony or misdemeanor other than a traffic violation since his last renewal. With his application, respondent provided court papers outlining supervised probation for 3 convictions of aggravated luring of a minor for sexual exploitation. Mr. Kramer, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Great. Mr. Skulski, let us start with you. Could you share with the board your status right now?
My status right now is I'm currently on probation as required by sentencing documents. I was arrested in July of 2018. I pled guilty in January 2020 and was placed on probation at that time. I also had a 60-day jail sentence. I completed that jail sentence over weekends in 2020 and was completed in October of 2020. I started treatment as required by probation, therapy, in May of 2020. I'm involved in that treatment once a week, every week, unless that day lands on a holiday. And that is my current status. I'm on probation and I'm in treatment every week. I'm currently still employed and working as an engineer, structural engineer, not using my seal.
Okay. Mr. Kramer, do you have anything to add to that?
Not really. Mr. Skulski was, as you can read from the details in the packet, not only was he discovered by one undercover officer, he was discovered by a second one, posing as a second person, unbeknownst to the first one. So this was something that Mr. Skulski has done twice, and possibly more, we don't know. Just it seems that way. My recommendation, and I didn't list one on here because I wanted to send it to the board, but my recommendation was to revoke his license.
Okay. Discussion by the board? Mr. Donaldson?
If I may, one thing that the board is going to have to take into consideration with this is that the specific rule has to do with whether or not respondent failed to comply with state, municipal, and county laws, codes, ordinances, and regulations pertaining to his area of practice. That is going to be a very important part of the rule to make sure you look at. The board is going to have to be able to articulate, if they believe there's a violation of this rule, the board is going to have to be able to articulate how the conduct may pertain to the area of practice.
I personally don't see how we can do that.
That's a, you know, that seems like a judgment issue by the board. I read through the cases and the final uniform conditions of supervised probation administered by the Adult Probation Department, the ADP. Mr. Skalski's life is highly, highly regulated at this point. I don't know that it's going to be tough for us to make a judgment whether he can be regulated for health, safety, welfare as a civil engineer when this case involves something not regulated, obviously. But it's a judgment issue. So, discussion by the board.
I will say that I think the courts have handled this and that there's not much for us to take care of on this. They're totally different than engineering practice. And like I said, the court has already handled this quite well. I would just say permit him to renew his license.
I would concur with that. I believe that he is working under a very structured environment right now, and he is making good on his efforts to move forward with his life. And I believe it doesn't impact his ability to do his job as a civil engineer, and I would support having his license renewed.
I would actually just ask him what the structure of his work is on a day-to-day basis.
Mr. Skalski, there's a question from Mr. Green, Board Member Green, about your daily activities at Caruso Turley Scott. What kind of work are you doing there?
I'm a structural designer. I work from home. I log into my computer through my home computer. I do structural design of usually medium-sized commercial buildings, providing calculations and submitting red lines to drafting. I also do site visits to commercial construction sites to do inspections or design coordination. My company is aware of my legal status and the restrictions that I have from probation. And that's what I do on a day-to-day basis.
Okay.
I'm satisfied, thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, I've got a question. Isn't there some sort of moral discipline that is required to be a professional engineer or architect? I mean, is there a fraud case? And I know it's difficult to think that he might take his license away. He can still practice under a structural license from the firm. But it seems to me that professionals have to have a standard of high moral duty. And I'm not sure this fits that. I'm torn because I don't necessarily think we should take his license, but what he's done or did or may do doesn't stand up to a professional.
Well, I think you have to look at the possible link between the two. And in this case, there isn't a link between what he did and the engineering and stuff. You know, if it were using a bad credit card or something like that. Well, now we're into the financial. We are getting closer to the field or something like that. But I would recommend that he just get his license and hopefully he behaves.
Yeah, I think the conditions for his supervised probation is lifetime.
Yes.
And it's very strict. So I guess From what I've read, he understands the severity of what he has done and is trying to get things turned around. I guess I'm inclined to give him his opportunity, especially if that supervision is lifetime related.
I agree.
I move to permit him to renew his license.
He has renewed. I think when you dismissal, the license has been renewed.
Oh, I thought it was held up.
No, this is there.
It was an application to renew.
That was administratively granted.
Oh, it was already given. Okay. Dismiss this case then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Have you a motion for dismissal?
Motion to dismiss this case.
I will second that.
First and second, thank you.
Individual.
Let's do a roll call. Kurt, if you would, please.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Aaron Green?
Aye.
Hubba Pack?
Aye.
Jennifer Hobick. Michael Kolecka?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Stephen Noel?
Aye.
Stacy Skanky?
Aye.
Kent Wilson?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Thank you for calling in, Mr. Skalski. Good luck to you in the future.
Members of the board, thank you for consideration. I appreciate you giving me this opportunity. Thank you.
Okay.
And I will drop off.
Thank you. Mr. Ream is not back yet. Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking for you up the desk. Any luck contacting Mr. Klein?
Yes, I did contact the law office and was informed that neither Mr. Klein nor his client, Mr. Arizmendi, were inclined to address the board. That wasn't the information that I was given initially. However, apparently there's some change of mind and that wasn't conveyed to me. But that's their position.
Okay. Let's proceed to 5C3 then. I just read through the synopsis. Obviously, there's some issues here. Mr. Ream, can you share with the board a summary of your investigation, please?
It's hard to summarize something as extensive as this was. This case was extremely labor-intensive. It was complicated by a number of misrepresentations that came from the respondent and her attorney about issues that I had to follow up on, but were primarily focused on someone who is an engineer in training. She had that designation before the board and was essentially working with a number of registrants, one of which is the alleger who filed a complaint, in working on land surveying and engineering type of work, and then having it reviewed by a registrant, having it stamped and once approved, and then submitting on behalf of clients that the respondent would get primarily in Santa Cruz County in southern Arizona. At one point in time, plans were submitted to Santa Cruz County on a septic system type of soil test type paperwork that was submitted to Santa Cruz County. And when there were issues associated with that, and there were a number of them, the alleger was contacted about the issues, at which time he had no knowledge of it. And that's essentially what prompted the case, is that that documents had been submitted, and in the first case, four specific stamped and sealed documents that he wasn't involved in was submitted, and when he found out about it, he started asking questions and ultimately filed a case before the board. There are actually two different projects that resulted in a total of seven documents that involved forged stamps and signatures. And in addition to the type of work that was being done by a non-registrant with respect to land surveying and engineering, there was the signatures that were forged and the seals, but in addition to that, there were two registrants involved in this particular case, and that's one of the elements that I brought forth before the board. one of which is the alleger himself. He brought forth this complaint. However, he was engaged in stamping documents without that person being a bona fide employee, which is a board regulation issue, as well as assisting and abetting the practice itself. There was another registrant who registered a firm for the board that was the respondent's firm, essentially. It had her name, had her email address, had her phone number. I have emails between her and this particular registrant as far as submitting the paperwork to the Arizona Corporation Commission, as well as the board itself, to establish this board, which essentially allowed her to have this firm on documents, and I have a number of them that has her firm in it. So this particular registrant was involved in registering this firm on her behalf and allowed her to do some of the things that she did. So in the course of the investigation, we actually got to the position where we had a consent agreement that has been agreed to by counsel as well as the respondent herself, and has been executed and signed, and I have it before me now. So I have that before the board, as well as just recommendations with respect to two additional registrants that, frankly, in my view, we need to open cases and investigate those issues.
When the MLP Lancer Ring was formed, Mr. Perez was the respondent registrant. It was the registrant for the firm. Kurt?
I apologize. I have to mention that Mr. McAllister has dropped in from the meeting and will remain off the meeting. We still have a quorum.
Thank you. So when the firm was created, Mr. Perez was the registrant for the firm.
He digitally signed the BTR registration form for the firm on behalf of our respondent.
Was he a principal with the firm? Was he an employee of the firm?
He had nothing. He essentially allowed for her firm to be registered before the board because she was unable to because she's not a registrant. He was. The two of them had done some business together, and he essentially volunteered to digitally sign the registration form for the firm on behalf of the respondent. Beyond that, I know of nothing that Mr. Perez was associated with the form itself. Essentially, it was done on her behalf, and then she just continued to do what she was doing.
I guess what I find most disturbing is that they indicated that these registrants were using her to go out and do the field work, not under their supervision, setting property corners and property lines, doing legal descriptions without any supervision.
Well, essentially, it was an informal agreement. It didn't involve a written document. It was essentially our particular respondent who had a customer base in primarily Santa Cruz County. A lot of people were seeking her services out. However, she wasn't able to complete all the type of engineering and land surveying work without being a registrant and the stamp and the signature, which essentially resulted in an association, in this particular case, with the alleger, who would simply review documents and either, I have a lot of email traffic back and forth in some instances where she didn't do all that she was supposed to and back and forth type of thing, but it was a financial agreement in which our respondent would pay, in this case, our alleger for his type of service, and then the client would, of course, pay the respondent overall for all of the work and that kind of thing. So that's essentially what was happening here.
So she was in violation from day one.
The registrants were in violation.
They all were.
They all were.
Yes.
And and that's my conclusion in the investigative report. The investigation was primarily on Ms. Arizmendi. However, during the course of my investigation, I find issues associated with two other registrants, and as such, I brought forth those particular issues because, frankly, they need additional investigation.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'll be assigned to me, and I'll be able to, because of my knowledge of this case, take those cases and bring them before the board.
There was a third registrant referenced in her letters, Mr. Frank Vasquez, as being one of the guys that uses her for this service.
I don't remember Mr. Voskovitz being
associated. Is he not the registrant? I didn't find his name.
The alleger, she couldn't get the alleger to sign, so she turned to another one, and they signed. I don't remember what that name was. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's at least two, plus I guess maybe the surveyor, but yeah, there's a... this is actually somewhat common.
And frankly, that's what I heard, even from the respondent's attorney. Common. Essentially, what he was arguing
you can see how quickly it was for her to get something signed, too, you know, with her statement.
But of course, my position, if argued it's a common practice, it still has to be in accordance with the regulations. So hearing that from counsel didn't influence me at all, because frankly, that kind of arrangement where I'm going to do this type of work, get it so that you stamp it, it violates the board's practice. Yeah. That was an issue for me.
Do you have a signed consent order from him?
I do.
So we can make a motion, obviously, to accept that, but then we'll also make a motion to initiate investigations on these other registrants. There was also a recommendation that this be turned over to the Attorney General's Office for prosecution for fraudulent use of a stamp. Is that so, your positions?
It is. Frankly, what happened here is criminal, and as such, in my view, it should be referred for prosecutorial review for potential criminal charges.
Right.
And Greg, just for clarity, since the consent in the board packet was not signed, what date was it signed?
It was signed October 22nd by the respondent.
Thank you.
Okay.
So can we accept it?
Is that for the fee? Yeah. The whole fine as well? $16,000?
No. The fine amount, the initial consent agreement had a total of $16,000, and primarily that was because of the number of instances of forgeries as well as the practice of a non-registrant. However, as we typically do in cases, we and counsel essentially negotiated with us for a lower administrative penalty, and we felt the negotiation was such that, you know, we agreed to it, and that's essentially why we have a signed consent order.
So what's the penalty then?
$10,000 administrative penalty, and they've also agreed to pay the cost of the investigation, which was $3,334, if I remember.
And who would they be?
The attorney and respondent?
Right. Exactly.
I just want to clarify, this respondent is an engineer in training. That's a designation we've given her? If she has to apply to us for that designation?
Yes.
And we're not here to revoke that or to make any adjustment to her status. That's not before us, and that's not in the consent agreement.
No. I would say not.
That'll come back later when she applies for full registration.
Okay. No. But we can't, there's no... Okay. Yeah, I suppose
we can't. The EIT is kind of there forever. There's no rejection of it.
But this will get sent to the Attorney General's Office for potential.
Yeah, I suspect that's probably a
good. Can I make a movement to accept the consent order?
Certainly.
I'll just get it.
We have a motion to accept the consent order. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second. All those, let's do a vote. Please, Curry, roll. Okay.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Aaron Green?
Nay.
Donna Pack?
Aye.
Jennifer Hovick is not here. Koleka?
Aye.
Clarence Left. Mr. Noel?
Aye.
Stacey Skanky?
Aye.
Kent Wilson?
Aye.
Motion carried. One nay.
Okay. Thank you, Kurt.
Move to look at the other cases.
Yeah, I think we'll instruct staff. Mr. Meme, if you would. Working with Mr. Carlin, start investigations of these other members. And I'm curious if Mr. Frank Vasquez was also referenced in one of those letters to her attorney. If you find a name, that might be worth looking into if he did the same thing.
I don't know of anything in course of investigation. Otherwise, I would recommend a case on him as well. His name, of course, did come up, but it wasn't to the extent with the other two.
Okay.
Do we have to move separately to refer to the AG?
We've made that.
That can be done either by direction or by motion. It may be best to do a formal motion just to have it on the record. But certainly, if you'd like to refer to the AG's office for further prosecution.
Okay, we have a
motion. I would say this occurrence that we just stick with the consent order and send it to the AG at this time.
There is
we still have other issues to deal with.
There's a fraudulent case of her using his stamp and his name on seven different documents. So
yeah, but there was
I personally think this does rise to the level where this should go to the Attorney General's office.
I think there is a motion, Mr. Chair, so there would need to be a second.
We have a motion.
Aaron Green made the motion.
Yes.
By Mr. Green to make recommendation that this be referred to the Attorney General's office for potential prosecution.
Yes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second, thank you. Kirk, could you do a roll call, please?
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Aaron Green.
Aye.
Ella Pack.
Nay.
Michael Kolecka.
Aye.
Stephen Noel.
Aye.
Stacey Skanky.
Aye.
Kent Wilson.
Aye.
Motion carried.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Mr. Ream.
Chair, could I ask a question?
Sure.
For the staff, we on the like the newsletter where you publish for the tech board like information. You probably should have a statement again reminding people, reminding registrants not to do these people have to be notified employees. And you know, you say it happens a lot, like it happens a lot here. We should just remind registrants you can't do that. You have to be a bona fide, but you just can't be stamping other people's work.
We still issue a newsletter?
Yeah, we haven't done it in quite some time. A lot of things have been going on and hasn't really put it on the back plate pretty much.
Well, I think that's a great suggestion. Okay, let's move on to item 5D2. Okay, we have no one calling in. Maybe we should move on to people who are waiting.
Sure, that sounds like a good one.
I'm sorry. I think we'll just try and get the people who are waiting. And we'll come back to 5D2. 5E1.
I do see Mr. Judge.
I'm here. Thank you.
Oh, this is for a recommendation for the EAC. Mr. Judge, thank you for volunteering to be admitted to our elite enforcement advisory committee. That's great.
You're very welcome.
Is there a recommendation or a motion by?
Move to accept.
We have a recommendation by Mr. Hack to accept that. Second
that.
Thank you.
All in favor?
All in favor?
Aye.
Those present? Please say aye.
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 Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Judge, welcome to the Enforcement Advisory Committee. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. What's the next step?
You'll be notified.
Okay.
ID2.
Yeah, let's do it very quickly. Derek Duscher, hope I said that correctly.
I'm present.
You're also volunteering to be a member of the Enforcement Advisory Committee. Thank you for your interest. Okay. Is there a motion to accept Mr. Is it Duscher?
It's Deutscher.
Deutscher, thank you.
I'll move to accept.
Okay, we have a motion.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor of accepting Mr. Deutscher's interest, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Deutscher, I got that right finally. Thank you for your interest, and we appreciate your volunteering to be a member. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. 5F1.
M2.
And two.
I move that we dismiss both.
All right, there's a motion.
And just to point out, both cases are currently dismissed. So the choice here is
do you take no action and they remain dismissed, or do you reopen the cases?
Take no action, dismiss.
Okay.
For both. Got a hand up.
I think I'm involved in that
case. Yeah, we have a motion. Let me get back to you in a second.
Okay.
I presume board members had a chance to review this case. This is here not long ago, and it was dismissed. But material information was presented after the fact, and so there's a question, does that impact our prior decision?
If I can say more to that.
Kurt.
Mr. Greifield Ledger had given us a PowerPoint presentation, the written statement, and that was to be put into the board packet. For all intents and purposes, staff believed it to be in the packet, and through a public information request following the dismissal of the cases, it was discovered that it actually did not end up in the board packet. So to bring it back to you to show, hey, these documents were submitted and they were submitted timely, but you guys did not get a chance to look at them over. But from the conversations that the board members had with the alleger and the respondent, do you believe that these would have made a change in that discussion, that in the choice the board made to dismiss the cases? So those have been presented back to you. I put the audio on the file share for you guys to listen to, so you can hear the discussions, and that's where we're at.
We have a motion. We haven't got a second yet, but I think if there's some discussion that can occur, we can still do that.
We would need to get a second since there's a motion on the table. If we get a second, then we would have discussion.
Okay. Is there a second to dismiss?
Before we get to a second, can we still hear from members of the public prior to voting?
There's
a motion, a second.
The board has the discretion to allow people to speak or not speak as they would like.
Then I'll second.
Okay. We have a motion to dismiss, but I think that's warrants some discussion. I'll open it up for the board. I've got my own opinion here, but let's open it for discussion by the board. And then we can have the alleger here, and the respondents, I believe, are here as well. So maybe we should start with Mr. Grief?
Right?
Yep. Please.
At the previous board hearing, do you folks all have the written statement that I submitted? Okay, I tried to go over it with the board at that time, and it didn't make much sense because you guys didn't have the document in front of you. One of the things that I was trying to put in front of the board, and this was not addressed by the EAC, even though it was raised with the EAC a month prior to their hearing, was that there was a real discrepancy in terms of the runoff amounts that were used in the calculations for this project. And I provided a spreadsheet to staff that showed that they're basically, if you've got that those pages in front of you, if you look at page 3 of that, that shows the drainage map that was prepared for this project.
That would be our page 922, I believe.
Yes.
Thank you.
I think the page numbers that I'll be going by are on the bottom corner, right corner.
Thank you.
The next, let's go to page 5, and that's an ADOT drainage report that covers some of the same area. And then page 6 is the Canyon Run development drainage report. Now, all three of these reports cover different areas and are for different projects. But what became apparent when I started looking at the documents in the Woodson drainage report that was prepared by Ms. Kaluri, was that the numbers didn't make a lot of sense. The runoff per acre for the Hope Street project was, it averaged out about 5.6 CFS per acre. The average for the Canyon Run project was 4.49 CFS per acre. and the average for the ADOT project was 1.45 CFS per acre. So it's roughly a quarter or a third of what was used in the Woodson report, the Hope Street report. And as I started looking into it farther, the ADOT report was incorporated into the Hope Street report. And there's a, this is going to be a little complicated, and I don't think there's an engineer present, but the calculation used to determine the number of CFS in runoff involves both projects use what's called our rational method, and there's a coefficient used to make that determination. So you use the coefficient, the calculated inches of rain per hour, and then the acreage. Well, the coefficient that was used for the project, both the Hope Street project and the Canyon Run project, is 0.66, and that's a number that comes from an ADOT manual. The coefficient that was used for the ADOT project was 0.3. And what's happened is, and this is in the ADOT report, the ADOT report classified all of the area that they were working with as grassland and juniper. And in fact, there's a mobile home park there, there's a motel there. It's the wrong classification. And that report was used and incorporated into the Hope Street report to determine the runoff in the ditches and in the culverts and for the spillways and everything else. There's an area, the area for the, if you look at, let's look at sheet three, that shows the Hope Street map and the areas in the Hope Street project. So there are five, there are areas one through five, there's a 1A in there, so there are actually six areas. If you go to page, and one of the things, there's kind of an index on that, you can see where Hope Street is. It should be yellow on your drawings as you look at them. Mm-hmm. If you look at sheet five, you'll see Hope Street, and that's the ADOT basin. Basin number two, a good portion of that drains into the Hope Street project. Okay.
But fundamentally, you're questioning the watershed areas.
It's not the area; it's that coefficient.
The coefficient, wrong. But
and the area of the ADOT area two is 13.3 acres. Okay, the whole Hope Street project is, I think, roughly six. So we're talking about a large area where the runoff was miscalculated, and that affects the whole project.
Sure,
you can't. Essentially, everything coming out of that calculation should be doubled.
Okay, can we hear from the respondents then? It's tough for us to come to a judgment on this. We're not civil engineers, even if we had a civil on board.
Well, I would suggest, and I appreciate that, but I would suggest that this needs to go back to the EAC, because I'm not sure that the respondents are necessarily going to give you a straight answer on this.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Gray, if you'd like to go ahead and take a seat in the audience for a minute.
Yep.
Thank you.
If you would please introduce yourselves.
Good morning or afternoon, I'm not sure. Rick Schuler, registrant, Woodson Engineering.
I'm Sirisha Kaluri, registrant with Woodson Engineering.
Okay. Can you kind of do a quick summary of the initial design? You went through a city process, and why we're here right now, your interpretation of how you see this.
Yeah, I'll start, and then Ms. Kaluri can continue. I think there were... After originally having this case dismissed, we felt that was the end of it, and we're surprised that now we're here again. I think it was made clear by the alleger and also maybe members of the board that the items he's brought back forth were indeed discussed during the last meeting of the board, and perhaps at EAC, which we didn't hear that, so I can't say that for sure, but it's safe to assume that since he had brought those issues up before that meeting, that they were then discussed. I think that's been clear. The other items in his latest document are not new and were also have been discussed in the previous meetings. I believe the thing to make clear here is that we were working for the city of Prescott. This is considered a relatively small project for them. They were the main people. They dictated basically the scope of the project, what we were to accomplish. And they also directed us to the ADOT report, which has been referred to. And it's common practice in smaller projects that we don't go and investigate everything, especially when there's when that's been done as part of a state agency, ADOT, and accepted, and other projects were built on that report. So the city gave us that report as part of our scope and our starting point, and we did use that. There was no reason for us to think to question that report as it was prepared by and accepted by a state agency. And that is standard practice in our industry. The city also made all the decisions on the project as it moved along through its process. And so we were following that scope. And I think the last point I would like to make is that if there was a change or there are some issues with that ADOT report, at the end of the day, it does not change how the project would have been done, because it was a mitigation project to correct a very old subdivision that had no drainage components in it at all. And we did, with a lot of care, try to mimic existing conditions. And that means the points where runoff was still hitting Granite Creek, which, by the way, is a 100-year floodplain and subject to complete inundation during big events. And in the case of more runoff hitting this project after it's been constructed, what simply would happen was the culvert and the drainage ditch that were part of it and in question there would reach capacity, and then that would translate to storing in the roadway, ultimately flowing over the curb in a sheet flow, is what we call it, spreads out fashion, which with the concentration points and the sheet flow was the historic condition. There was no change made to the area that is tributary, is what we call it, to these, to this mitigation project. I'll answer any questions related to that.
Okay. So this went through city review with the city of Prescott. Everything's been approved and accepted.
That's correct.
Okay. Any questions from the board on this? Is Mr. Ream still here?
Ms. Fuller is also here.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let's go ahead and would you introduce yourself and share your position on this? Thank you.
Yes. My name is Sirisha Kaluri. I'm one of the respondents. I worked on the drainage design. So this is Hope Street is a mitigation project, as the name suggests. It's improvement project to improve over the existing conditions. So this is for an old subdivision which had no drainage design. So city had a lot of complaints in last few years, or you know, since the subdivision was there, because there was no proper drainage design. So we were hired to just to repave about like 500 feet, and the rest was remove, repave. And then we designed the drainage components of it. The watershed drains to Granite Creek. As Rick noted, it's a FEMA flood zone AE, which is a special flood hazard area. Most of the homes that were by the creek were already inundated by the 100-year floodplain, and the creek itself is in floodway. So talking about the ADOT report and the different flow rates. So as you know, from the listed flow rates per CFS, the CFS per acre, Hope Street certainly has higher CFS per acre. That's because we use City of Prescott standards, and City of Prescott standards are really conservative in regards to time of concentration. So there is actually a little bit of safety factor built into our design already. And we designed riprap, and the size, the calculated size was doubled just in case, as you know, again, that's another layer of safety factor that we have in the design. One of the things to note is, because this is a private subdivision and the improvements were supposed to be built on private lots, we require easements. And that was a very major factor, or I would say limitation for our design. So we worked closely with the city, and they told us what the easements were, you know, what easements were available. And at some point they were like, nothing more is available. So yeah, the sizing pretty much was dictated by the easements. So if there is any other tributary area coming in, that happened before the Hope Street improvements, even if it's happening now, but the size of the improvements wouldn't change, meaning they wouldn't be taking any additional flow. So what would happen to the flow? It would just sheet out into the Granite Creek where it was going before. So that is not changing from any of these new issues that are being brought up. And we already explained these issues before the EAC meeting and provided a rebuttal. Even, you know, we were just given like a week time, but the EAC board had it at least 2 to 3 weeks before. And these questions were also raised in the last board meeting before the dismissal of the cases, and I provided the same response. One thing to note is this year, this area has suffered a lot of monsoons, and per NOAA, this area had like fourth wettest in the last 123 years. So that was from 1898 to 2021, which is a standing testimony that the project works. So numbers aside, if it's really working in the field, it's a proven performance. City went and checked the areas. They had no complaints this year. So I think the project actually met the objective.
Okay, thank you.
Can I
respond to that?
Okay, quickly.
Yeah, I'll do it quickly. For one, there haven't been any storms anywhere near a 25-year event in the area. The other thing is that there are a lot of facilities that were built that are supposed to handle the storm. So the drainage ditches are supposed to carry a 25-year event. Some of them are supposed to, you know, carry more than that. The freeboard on one of the main ditches, ditch C, is 5/8 of an inch. And if it goes over the top of that, it's going to flood out some of the people who live there. And so it isn't just a matter of a sheet flowing. They basically concentrated flows and changed what was a sheet flow system where everything just spread out and went everywhere. And now they've got concentrated flows. And there's no engineering that shows what that's going to do. And that was one of the concerns that was raised at the previous board meeting. I should also say that at the EAC meeting, I asked specifically whether the EAC had addressed this issue of the sort of discrepancies in the flows. And the only answer I got was that they had not. So the EAC hasn't looked at this. And it seems like, for some reason, people don't want to look at it. But I think it's significant. And I think if they can prove out, I haven't heard either of them deny that those calculations were wrong in the ADOT, that what I'm saying about the ADOT report is wrong. There's actually a statement in the ADOT report that says that this is characterized as grassland and juniper. There's also a statement in the ADOT report that says water flows across the highway and floods a motel on the other side. So there were some real clear indications in that ADOT report that should have had somebody that knew what they were doing scratching their head.
Okay.
So I appreciate you thinking about that.
Thank you. Mr. Boyd?
A question. If you didn't do the improvements, this was an improvement project, correct?
Yes.
So if you didn't do these improvements, it'd be a bigger flooding problem.
That flooding.
So whatever you did would be an improvement.
That's what we
see. So maybe you did the improvements weren't to the 100-year or the 50-year event, but they were what could be handled with what you had to work with.
Exactly. In a mitigation project such as this, I don't think that's unusual at all. You have to work with what you're dealt with.
Has there been any feedback or concerns from the city of Prescott related to the work that was performed?
No. The city is 100% behind us. Mm-hmm. They were going to be on the call today. I'm not sure if they hung around for that. They were at on the call for the EAC meeting, and were they for the board?
Both they weren't, but they actually provided a support letter supporting the work they did and saying that they were happy.
The city of Prescott was pretty much dictating what had to be taken care of here, right?
Yes.
How old is this project? It's like in the 60s, older? Because...
The development
there. It's really old, right?
It's old. Yeah. 50s,
yeah. 60s. And it's typical that no thought is going to be put in the drainage. And it's going to be pretty much upon the individual owners to go beyond what the city allowed.
But if the city builds facilities, they're going to fail.
Well, you have a project that's 50 years old. It was never given a design for drainage. And this project was only to reduce the problem, you know, that you were facing out there. To go in, and that's all the city was going to allow to be spent, was to, you know, fix the roads and do some drainage in that. To go any more than that, it's the community that's going to have to pull together and put up the money for a much bigger design to solve bigger problems.
Yes, yeah, I guess that's my part of our big right now is that
they're general engineers.
I'm sympathetic for you, and I understand. Yeah. I've got some empathy, but this board really can't make a decision on that was an improper design. I think you need to go back to City Prescott and
yes.
press your case, because it's really kind of out of our hands.
Doesn't the board have a responsibility to enforce? I mean, there's a In the administration code, it says that a registrant shall comply with municipal codes and ordinances and regulations.
And they did.
They did?
Obeying what Prescott has asked of them. That's all they can do. They can't take money out of their own pocket and go beyond what the city of Prescott's doing.
They can say that this project, we can't build it and be in compliance with
it. And that's part of the mitigation. We're reducing the problem that you had out there. It's not a complete package. But it's to help reduce the problem that you had. And that's all they can do, and we can't go beyond that either.
Yeah, our hands are tied.
Yeah.
I think your case needs to go back to the city of Prescott and say, I believe there's a bigger issue here. Coefficients, washing areas don't seem to...
You don't think the drainages have been as represented?
You have to go through Prescott for that.
No, I'm saying right now, right here, today.
We're not in a position to give that judgment.
Well, then it needs to go back to the EAC.
No.
They dismissed it.
You need to go back to the city of Prescott and ask with your neighbors, and you need to try to get more out of it from them.
Kurt.
Does anybody else have opinions? Do you guys want to go to motion?
Oh.
Well, we have a motion and a second.
We have a motion and a second.
To dismiss
this case. We've given the courtesy to get these guys to share their positions.
Sorry,
the motion is still in place.
Motion
Thank
and a
you.
Second to take no action because it was already
right.
dismissed.
Right.
So
we have a board member back. She didn't participate or hear it, but since we do have a motion to
take no action.
Thank you. I'd like to get a roll call on that vote, please.
Okay. Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Aaron Green?
Aye.
Helma Pack?
Aye.
Jennifer Holbeck?
I abstain.
Michael Koleka?
Aye.
Stephen Noel?
Aye.
Stacy Stokey?
Aye.
Kent Wilson?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Thank you for coming in. I encourage you to go spend some time in the city of Prescott and share your pressure case.
Thank you, Lord.
No, yeah.
Thanks for coming in.
We feel your pain.
Five minutes, Jeff, before we launch into licensing.
Yeah.
When I come back, I guess I want to find out who's in the back here.
Yeah, is there someone?
Let's take a 10-minute break.
Yep.
And be back here at like 8 minutes after 12. 10 minutes after it closes. Thank you.
Okay. Can we get this going? We are now recording.
Okay, the Board of Technical Registration is back in session. We're moving on to licensing matters. And we're going to start with 681, application for registration and certification. We have some members here, Greg and Christian. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yes, my name is Christian Bluth. This is my manager, Greg.
I'm Greg Hine. I'm a high volume operation manager for ADT Securities in Tampa.
Okay. Application as an alarm agent. Julie, do you want to?
Right. So Mr. Bluth applied as an alarm agent. This is coming before the board because he had a previous alarm agent certification that was revoked due to not following through with a consent agreement. So that's why it's before the board.
And how long ago was that?
The consent agreement was issued in 2014 and he was revoked in 2016.
So what have you been up to for 5 years? Are you still doing alarm business?
Yes, sir. I've been having travel for work.
Okay.
I can't get licensed.
Julie, is there any question of from staff?
No, this is just before board for review to consider the previous revocation and if we should continue processing his current application.
I've assumed, Mr. Greg, that you've got some good things to say about your employee here.
Absolutely. He's a fine young man. Sorry, this was a pretty long-winded meeting today, so
sorry.
I've been in meetings since 4 in the morning, so this hasn't been great for me. He started off with a dealer, and like I've talked to you, Kurt, the rules are really not set for the alarm agents in the state. So a lot of dealers send their guys out without licensing, without even informing them. He got caught working without a license. Never knew. Came in, paid for the fine. Got his license, case was reopened with the letter, what was it called?
Consent agreement.
Yeah. By that time, he went to Hawaii to work, not knowing about it. Came back, knew about it, went to Colorado to work. We want to bring him back to Arizona. He's a great guy. He's probably our highest. He runs about 98% on medallia scores. That's our survey scores. He's a trainer. Customers love him. He's honest. He's got a lot of integrity. So I like to see him be on his own now.
Very good. Sounds like our guy.
Yeah.
Any questions from the board?
So what did you do in the probation period or whatever it was? What were you supposed to do that you didn't?
So when I originally was contacted, I wasn't aware of the requirements for to be licensed. So I went and got licensed and worked for a period of time, and then that license was revoked because the case was reopened.
Because of failure to comply with a consent agreement.
Which was the pay fine?
I'm going to be honest, it was a while ago, so I don't remember how much it was, but I do remember that there was a fee that I did pay once it was determined that I was not scamming anybody originally.
Julie?
And that is included in your packet, board members, as far as the fees that were included in the consent agreement. I don't have the historical knowledge if those were ever paid. According to the revocation order, they weren't, and that's why his certification was revoked.
But those fees were paid eventually?
I would have to look into that.
According to record, not, but you have a canceled check?
I don't remember details.
That would be more on the enforcement side. I'm not quite sure.
Just for my edification, I apologize. I didn't catch your name, sir. Non-registrant.
Yep. Oh, me? Yes. Greg Hine.
Greg Hine.
Yes.
What, you were speaking to Mr. Winter. What did you mean when you say the rules out here aren't set?
We don't have no reputation for alarm agents. There's really no rules of what sets us or how to regulate us.
If I can do more. So, okay, with our practice act, we have our statutes, we have our rules. With the alarm industry, we have statutes. There are absolutely no rules regarding the alarm industry. They just, they've never come about, and as I discussed with him, the alarm industry would like to see rules come about.
Okay. That's something we can agendize for a later meeting.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, when the state became, you know, before we used to do individual cities and stuff like that, plus this is way before we did the level one fingerprint cards and just standard prints. So a lot of dealers, and I originally came from a dealer. Dealers code us as outside sales reps, even though we're technicians, without informing us that we there's proper licensing that's required. So a lot of this stuff does slip through systems. His incident was not, you know, purpose or anything like that. I did not know. And he's a great technician. Customers love him. He's a great asset to ATM Securities. We need him out in the field.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve the certification for Mr. Bluth. Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor of accepting certification, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you, Board, for letting us come up here. And hopefully, if you guys ever need help to come up with rules, I'm definitely going to help.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
You have a business
card? Might want to take you up on
that. I would actually, I'm going to email Mr. Okay. Winters, because I have technicians licensed in multiple states.
Okay.
So I'm pretty familiar with that. But appreciate
Thank
your
you
time.
For your patience. Ready.
Thanks for waiting.
Today. No problem. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Okay, item 6A2, William Kassler, application for reactivation of registration as an architect.
Only if needed.
Board members, this is before the board because Mr. Kassler did have disciplinary action in Las Vegas, Havana, earlier this year, and he was fined by the Nevada board. That's why it is before for consideration for reactivation.
But no issues here in Arizona.
Okay, yeah, you have a pretty sizable fine. Don't have any. Okay. Any discussion on this by the board?
So, what did he do in Nevada? He wasn't registered.
He wasn't registered. He provided services.
Do we know if he has applied for licensure in Nevada?
I don't know. I did a search. He doesn't have a current license in Nevada.
I looked too. I couldn't find anything. Yeah.
It looks like he complied with this fine and all of the
administrative actions.
It seems like he has, a license in Ohio?
He has multiple licenses.
So.
And that one's in good standing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I would move to a granted.
Me too. I would second that.
Okay, we have a first and a second. All those in favor of accepting the re-registration, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. All right. Well, that's staff.
I mean, it's always good to ask.
Any names? Okay, I think we'll accept that. Thank you. Okay, exam waivers. Item 6B. We do this as a group. Are there waivers we need to discuss?
I'd like to say, Mr. Gilmore, even though you have a very lengthy looking call-in list that was provided to you, most, if not all, of these individuals are there just to answer any questions you may have.
I only have a question on, or a comment on B1, but 2 through 7 I would approve.
I would request that you look further at number 5. He's a foreign applicant.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He's applying with, he has registration in 2 different countries.
Yeah.
To total the 10-year
Well, that actually brings up something else. That's the one he has a short little project in Maricopa City?
That I don't know what the project is.
I think this is the one that he's only going to be here for a short term. I know other states have a situation where someone from out of state, because of the companies coming doing work, that they can have like a, you know, 6 months waiver. We don't have that, of course, but I would just say, I would say okay with him. It's a temporary deal. Hopefully it stays that way. But
don't make a decision saying it's a temporary deal, because if you choose to register somebody, that means they're registered.
Well, yeah.
We're not issuing temporary
licenses. Yeah.
At least 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, if we had the ability to grant a short time, fine, but he seems to have the qualifications.
He's applying for structural engineer and trying to waive the both fundamental and professional exams.
And he's got prior exam experience? Another.
Which country is that? Sorry.
Australia's
licensure requirements are pretty similar to the United States in terms of for engineers and architects.
No comment as to Bahrain?
I'm not familiar with Bahrain, so I can't speak to that. Yeah.
Do we have any precedents on the board of combining hours from?
I would direct you just to statute 32-126A3 is what these applicants apply under for the waiver. Your interpretation of that.
Gotcha. Is it in the packet that we're going to look
at?
That's right.
I
just
curious. No. I put it in the memo.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Are we on 5B5, or are we going to be down one?
What? I thought
6B5.
Didn't Mr. Hack say you had a comment on B1? Mr.
Yeah, and the only one I had there was the grant of comedy. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he didn't apply for that, but
we actually don't have that.
No. Are you talking about the universal?
No.
Reciprocity?
We don't have reciprocity in our rules. Actually.
That's how I got into the state. I guess I did it wrong.
We need to change the rules.
For the architecture engineer.
Yeah. Architectural engineer.
Right, yeah, because architect you do, but first probably not. Gotcha.
Well, he certainly has a lot of education experience. Civil, geotech, PhD.
He did request to be called, but it is a foreign number, so I'm not sure if we can call him.
If he's in Bahrain, that's 10 hours.
Australia.
Well, that's even worse. That's 16 hours ahead. So, yeah.
It's 17-hour difference, yeah.
I'm so sorry. Are we talking about B1 right
now?
No, B5.
B5.
Okay.
Sorry. We bounced around there.
We did two things at once, multitasked.
But we have to be able to prove that in Bahrain, his requirements are similar to what we have here. We probably can't do that, but we do have a comment saying the Australian requirements are similar. So Bahrain probably doesn't mean anything.
Well, if it was under A3 or 126A3, I don't see a requirement in the statute that requires them, that requires us to make a determination as to whether or not the requirements are similar. He just has to be in that same profession. I don't think we're actually called upon to judge whether or not Bahrain engineering is similar to Australian or American engineering.
Bahrain, that's right across from Iran, right?
I
might be thinking.
It's on the Persian Gulf. It's on the Persian Gulf.
Similar. I don't know that last quotation. I'm pretty darn sure in the past we've looked into what their requirements were in these other countries and if they were similar. We have to be similar for other states. And imagine for the country.
And if we are going
so that's A1. A1 requires requirements for registration that are substantially identical to this state, but A3 just says you have to be professional registering in the profession. And if I understood staff correctly, he's applying under A3.
That's correct.
Okay.
I guess you can also think about it in this way, is that does
the engineer in Australia, that term had the same terminology as it would be here, is that even though he's what he's called a structural engineer or whatever it might be, is that in fact what he is? And so that's for you to constantly kind of look at.
And kind of pulling on that thread as well, keep in mind that he has more experience in Bahrain than Australia, so he was certified in Australia 3 years ago, mm-hmm. versus his Bahrain certification, which was 2008.
Yes, 12, 13 years ago.
To your point, that it may be important to understand what that certification requirement looks like.
For the board to keep in mind, he's applying with a combination of both licenses for the number of years to meet the 10 mm-hmm. years. And again, that's for the board to interpret that.
For structure and civil, right?
Structural.
Just structural.
Just structural.
See, that's been a problem in the past where civils have wanted to get into structure. They don't have the examination background, and it's kind of a like a sidebar for civils. They can do some structure up to a point that they can't.
49%.
And for our new board members, I don't know if it might be a little bit helpful to know, it was interesting for me to learn, with these national exams with the engineers, they have 16 specific exams. The only one that hasn't been able to still go to computer-based testing is the structural exam, because it is 16 hours. It's given in 2 8-hour sections, structural one and structural two, and has to be hand-graded. It's really extensive. not to say that the others are not, but to me that's significant to know. There's two separate portions, structural one and structural two.
And here I stressed about the bar. Architects have six exams now, so we're pretty bad too. So.
And Arizona also recognizes specific branches of engineering. We don't just register a professional engineer. You're a professional civil engineer or structural engineer or electrical engineer. We recognize 17 different branches of engineering.
But we are in the minority.
On that. Yeah.
Most states are just professional engineer.
Well, what's his alternative if we deny that?
Take the exam.
He'd have to take the exam, basically, yeah.
Or team up with another local.
Yeah, local.
Structure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the point being is health and safety of citizens of Arizona. And I don't think we know his true background. Maybe he is qualified, but he might have to provide more information than what he's already provided.
Could you want me to try to call him?
Sure. Or could, I don't know if call will do much good at this point. I'm wondering if it'd be worth providing additional information on his specific work experience more than what's
here. Does have that. Well,
he did provide a summary.
It's kind of a summary. I just wonder if maybe some additional references would be helpful to substantiate that.
Well, he says his professional registration as a professional engineer, ours are written exam, none. So it's...
Several countries will allow you to have your license right out of school without having to go to exams. India is a good example of that with architecture. They don't have to take exams in India. They just
right.
license it as part of their education.
So does it sound like you would like this kind of sent back to Julie to get additional information?
What specifically? So she knows what to ask you.
It might be nice to know what kind of testing was required in Australia and Bahrain then. And he obviously has the 10 years experience covered. But maybe just a comparison of what they had to go through to get their stamp there.
Education and experience.
Yeah.
Is all you had to do. Either one.
Would you like certificates of experience? Someone to verify.
That would be helpful. Yeah, with some references.
References.
Yeah. That's what we do here for initial licensure.
But typically, in maybe similar conditions, we would waive the fundamental exam, but not the professional exam. Mm-hmm. Or we'd make them take that exam, but not the fundamental, because he's got a PhD, you ought to know it. And a lot of these guys don't want to take it because
I forgot this.
Yeah, that's the worst part.
Well, could we potentially postpone him until we get that information?
Can we continue it to next
time?
Yeah. Okay. I think Mr. Hatch, you had a question on another one?
No.
We want to start the top.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say yes. That's all. Exam waiver. What is his next step after exam waiver? He just gets his license, right?
He can still apply for a license.
Applies, but he would have to take an exam.
Not if you waive it.
Okay.
Are you on one?
That's fine. I would say the rest of them, 1 through 7 minus 5, would approve.
Well, is that a motion?
It is. Move. I would move to say yes to 1 through 7 minus 5.
Pending additional information
for 5. Yeah.
And if I may, just for the record, because this is audio as well, number 5 is Utomo Poncho, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, and its registration is structural engineer 212428. That is the one you're accepting, correct?
That's
the exception from the. Yeah.
I accept 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, or 7.
Okay.
What are these? What are these numbers down here? Also, you know, like let's say 7. It says structural engineer 21, 21, 53. Is that just our number?
That's application number. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mr. Boyd, you have a question.
Is there a state test that? Everybody but surveyors have to take?
Just surveyors.
I think they should all take it.
The surveyor test?
No. The state exam.
Oh.
It's about the laws.
Do we have a second?
Thank you. I have a question.
That's Roy. Okay.
For David Krug, number one, he's registered as an engineer in Kansas via exam. He wants to become a registered architectural exam?
He wants architectural to engineer.
A what?
Architectural engineer. It's different than architect.
So why would we waive that? Because he's got an engineer civil, I presume, let's say. Now he wants to get into more architectural refinement. That's like they say he was structural. Same thing. I mean, that's you're waiving an exam to see if he's confident in something. He's confident in some base engineering field, and he wants to specialize in architectural engineering, or it could be structure, it could be a lot of different things. We're saying, fine.
What if we did the same thing as number 5? We requested additional information based on any experience that he's done in the architectural engineering field, and if so, provide that to us for further consideration.
Well, in 5's case, he didn't take any exams.
Right.
So, that's a little different. Mm-hmm.
I would say in the packet, you do have his NCES record, which does have a breakdown of experience over his 35 years. I guess you can pick that apart to see if there is architectural experience in there. And I think this one falls under, because Kansas is just professional engineer, there's not a specified branch, and he is applying under that same, you know, been licensed for 10 of the last 15 years.
Yeah, 35 years.
Do you know what page that's on? Or something in the 2000s?
For which one? The NCE?
Yeah.
So what's the overlap between architectural engineering and structural? Quite a bit.
It can be. It all depends on what you're doing within that specific license. So the architectural engineer is much broader, obviously, than just the structural, but that doesn't mean that you can't technically, like I could technically do certain elements of an engineer, provided that it's not more than 49% of my business,
mm-hmm.
and at least that's how the board has looked at it in the past.
Or over 3 stories.
Or certain size, but actually not even that, it just says, and again, at the end of the day, you have to take the liability that, you know, if you get your license, you still have to do it right, and if not, then Well, he'll be sitting right there. He'll be sitting right there.
His bachelor's is in architectural engineering.
Yeah.
That's right.
Not to say that you practice that after, but...
But the work experience.
So, question answered? No?
Yeah, I think he needs to take the exam.
Okay, so let me rephrase that. I move to accept items 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7 to waive exam.
Would that be a modification to your original?
It's a modification.
Okay, yeah. Would the second like to amend the...
Okay, we have a motion to accept 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7.
Got a question, Judge.
Up for the exam waivers, Mr. Boyd.
So number two, just like the other one, here is a civil, and looks like he took the exam in civil, mm-hmm. correct, in North Carolina.
Right.
Now, why would he have to take the exam here?
Number two, he took the structural one. And I believe the discussion was made last meeting as far as the structural one previously in other states was considered similar to a civil exam. So that's why he was licensed in North Carolina. But he's requesting to waive the civil and be registered as a civil.
But he's got registration as a structural one?
No, he has a here or in another state?
Just
a professional engineer.
Just a PE.
Yeah.
And he wants to be a
civil.
Civil here.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the structural part come in?
He took the structural one exam instead of a PE civil exam.
And you're saying that has some civil elements built into it?
Is what was discussed at a previous board meeting.
Discussion. We don't have something in our statutes that say that.
So he's a structural engineer and wants to go backwards to civil?
No, we don't. We don't know what kind of engineer specifically is in, what is it?
North Carolina.
If he were North Carolina.
Because they're just registered as an engineer, a professional engineer, not specific like we look at.
Well, how does that help us in Arizona?
Well, it makes it difficult for us in Arizona. But again, finding that we are more the exception on that, I think that's something that we really need to look at.
Given that he could practice in North Carolina as a PE doing the exact same work as here, it's the terminology of our licensure is how we do it here.
That makes it a little bit difficult. And really, it was only like a month ago or something that on a call with NCWS that I didn't realize Arizona was kind of the exception there. So, and I know we can't have a discussion on it because we're not on the agenda right now.
It'd be a great topic for a future family.
I think it would be. I think we should
get into that. I think we need to talk about it.
So
I think a lot of these, they're all similar. They're wanting to be registered like the structural engineering, and he wants to waive the SE2 exam.
All the waivers.
No, I understand completely.
I guess it comes down to if they could practice in that speciality in another state with just a general PE, which is what he has, here because we've broken it out into individual trades, now he has to apply for an exam, whereas in, I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong, Judith, I think it's like 45 states that don't have differentiations between
Trades. I think there's only maybe four jurisdictions that, like Arizona, right now. And it makes it really challenging because the information isn't there readily for us to compare to. So they want to be a structural engineer here. That sounds daunting because you don't want somebody, plans for a building that falls down.
Well, if we were in Florida, we'd really be concerned. But
so, if you're a civil here in the state, you can do some structural work, and it's
provided it's a minority of your business practice.
Maybe not even that. I mean, you get limitations on the size of the building. You can do some walls and some simple things. But you have to be able to practice within your knowledge. I mean, you can't just because you're a civil. I mean, you can do some civil work that you don't know anything about. you still have to practice it, but you know. It looks like a lot of these cases are
border.
I think they're stretching, yeah, the borderline.
And that's why they're here before you, because we can't just make that call. That's we can't do that. You guys have to do that.
Well, I'm always inclined to have them take the PE exam, whatever the field is, if it's a little bit off the beaten path of what they've been doing. If they're civil, now they want to do structure. I mean, we have a structure exam here because we thought it was important at some point in time. Mm-hmm. And to think now, just because other states don't have it, I mean, it's not important here. It just makes it more difficult to decide.
Yeah, it's kind of on the applicant to prove otherwise or whatever. He needs to come up with the material to...
Right. If he can show that he's done buildings in North Carolina, in this case, that are, you know, of that level of field that he's looking at doing them, or she, that's different. That would be helpful.
So, I would say that in your packets there is either the council record or certificates of experience to break down what projects that they have worked on, but I can certainly go back and ask for more.
Can we ask our EAC members who are structural or civil to look at some of these and say, is that relevant experience?
Typically, do we do that if there's a council record?
Typically not with a council record, but with certificates of experience, they have been evaluated.
Okay, good.
The council record being
NCWS, that they already have a council record established with...
Because they already had it verified, their experience.
Yeah. Oh.
Their experience in engineering or what they want to get in structure or whatever.
In engineering.
Just general engineering.
Well, that's still the same then, right?
Well,
there's several, but we don't know what structural capabilities they have.
Didn't the NCEES suggest that we could call them for help on matters like this? Seemed like they offered.
If they have a council record, I don't think that's what they were talking about. I think they were talking about, like, maybe if you have an individual with something foreign or something that...
Because I do remember they were talking about, you know, the different states having different rules. They're trying to get everybody on the same page and confusion and stuff. And it sounded like they were willing to help us iron out a roadblock that we might have had for another state. It seems like they would have more knowledge of the other states than we would, but...
Is there council record, Julie? Does it always... It doesn't even state which exams they've taken. I mean, does it say which of the PE exams?
It typically does.
Just not the EPIs. They said they don't identify.
Correct.
So do we have... That was the other question I had. Do we have more than one FE exam for engineers?
NCWS has 7. Mm-hmm. 6 specific and 1 for all the rest.
Because in California, I thought all they had was 1. All engineers had to take the same test. That's what I was under the impression.
This would be the national.
To find out that there's 7 separate ones that down the road makes it tougher for everybody.
I mean, nationally, NCWS recognizes 24 branches of engineering. For their fundamentals exams, they offer 6 specific and 1 kind of catch-all for all of the rest. And then I think 16 different exams for the professional engineers, the PEs.
So if they got the NCS
council record,
we know if they've taken one of those 7.
It would say if they took an FE, right, but not which FE.
Correct. They don't specify which one.
But it does specify the PE, sorry.
Most of the time, unless a state has verified that they don't know. So some states just put unknown because they, again, are just licensing professional engineers and they don't necessarily keep track of what the exam was.
So we do have a structural exam, right, for PE?
Yeah, SE1 and SE2.
If it's said on his application, he wants to waive his civil PE exam, I'd say fine, because he's a PE in North Carolina, so he's taking the exam. If he wants to do structural work,
take the exam.
He could be like a structural engineer. He's got to take the exam. Yeah. He wants to do structural work tied to civil registration, which is maybe the structure light. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He could do that.
Okay. I withdraw my earlier motion.
Well, then we're about three.
So what are we left with now? Six.
Well, one at a time.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, let's go to B1. Mr. David Krug, application to waive the PE architectural exam. And for registration as an architectural engineer.
Based on his experience that I've seen on his work experience, I would support the waiver.
Okay.
Is that a motion?
Yeah, I will have to make a motion to waive Mr. Krug's application to waive PE architectural exam for registration as an architectural engineer.
Great. We have a motion.
Second.
And a second.
By Mr. Second. Hag.
Thank you. All those in favor of approving this, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Any nays? Thank you. Okay, B2. Clarence Joyner III, application to waive the PE civil exam and for registration as civil engineer.
Here we go. And all he has is a PE license.
So he wants to work in civil structure. I guess whatever that means, he's got a civil license in North Carolina, which is fine.
Can I have his phone number if you have any questions for him?
What's that?
Can I have his phone number if you have any questions for him?
So he's a professional engineer in North Carolina.
And in Georgia.
And in Georgia.
And he has a structural, although it's misspelled. That's the whole issue.
we have to ding a
structural engineer in Georgia through reciprocity. And he is active in good standing. So
is that structural engineer in Georgia? Is that a structural engineer like we would think?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or structural in this case. Very specialized. Yeah.
So he's all structural. You know how he wants to do a civil without taking the exam?
Well, he's got a civil with a PE. I don't know what that is.
Well, that's like what Kansas. Kansas does the same thing.
He's a professional engineer in Georgia. He's also a structural engineer in Georgia.
But he also has a civil engineering technology degree, a bachelor's from the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, which would tell me that he has the training under civil as well as structural. So based on that,
that anybody just graduated from school probably can't do the work anyway.
I've got a few
experience.
Yeah.
Well, he did graduate in 97.
Yeah.
That's even worse.
I graduated.
Okay.
Is there a motion here?
Yeah.
Based on the experience, I'd make a motion to approve the exam waiver for Mr. Joyner.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor of accepting the waiver for Mr. Joyner, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Any nays? Okay. Bill number three, Lawrence Duffy, his application is to waive the SC2 exam and for registration as a structural engineer.
And as was mentioned, he has a SC1, probably should sit for the SC2, right?
I think
so.
he's registered in like every state in the world.
Does SC attached listing?
Oh, that's
right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You got reciprocity.
Yeah, it's got a lot.
Civil or civil structural listed. Sorry, four states.
Looks like he's covered in civil and structure.
Yeah. Okay. Pretty extensively.
It's your call.
Yes.
Motion to
accept waiver for Warren Stuckey.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor of approving the application for a waiver for Lawrence Duffy, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Okay, any nays? Okay, Mr. Duffy is approved for a waiver. B4, is there a question on this one? We'll go ahead and just go ahead and do it. Application waive PE exam for Lawrence Rohrwasser. I'm sure I butchered that. And for registrations of Sybil.
Second.
Was he making the motion?
Sorry.
You like Sybil's? That's a problem. All right. Any discussion?
It looks like he's a Sybil. Took the exam as a Sybil. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He wants to be a Sybil in the state. And that's one of the things you're trying to do in this state. If you took the exam in a state, you can move over to, say, our state, and that's fine.
Right. Yeah.
If you stay in the same discipline.
Okay.
Seems simple.
Is there a motion in there?
Oh, you just said it.
Just did.
You got a second motion.
Jump the gun.
We need a first motion then. We have a second already. Is there a motion to approve? Oh, well, to redo it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I move to approve Mr. Rohrwasser's application to waive the PE civil exam and for registration as a civil engineer.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a first and a second. Those in favor of this application for waiver, please say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Any nays? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to continue item number 5, Mr. Ponjo Utomo, pending additional information from his experience and examination from Bahrain and from Australia.
And I second that.
Very good. All those in favor of postponing this application, say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. Any nays? Okay. Staff, you'll take care of that. Okay, Kenneth Rowland, application to waive PE electrical exam. For registration as electrical engineer.
All right, for 6 and 7, both individuals are actually currently registered with us under one branch of engineering, and now they're applying for a second branch or third. And so this one falls under statute 32126B1, where they need to show 4 years of experience
in that
branch.
And do both of those show that?
Okay. According to the evaluation.
So number 6 does, you say? Kenneth Rowland?
6 and 7.
So in Kenneth Rowland's application, he doesn't even say he's registered in the state?
He is a mechanical engineer with us.
In Arizona.
Okay.
He didn't list it. It's odd he didn't list it. Well, it's previous. Well, it should have it still there to get it.
But now he wants to be electrical?
Yes.
From mechanical, without any testing.
Oh, he's also a fire protection engineer with us.
Cool. And he's demonstrated at least 4 years of experience working in electrical as well.
He submitted 3 certificate of experience forms, and they were evaluated, and it was determined that he had over 4 years of electrical experience.
Okay. I'd support that.
And then same thing for Mr. Charbonneau. He's got the experience of grants again.
He also submitted the references.
So, Mr. Chair,
basing on his references and what the review, who reviewed the references?
An evaluator.
Okay. And they were good with it.
Mm-hmm. And he has taken the SE1, so this would be just to waive the SE2.
It's just the harder one of the two. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to approve application to waive the PE electrical exam for Mr. Rowland as well as the SE2 exam for Mr. Charbonneau.
I second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor of waiving these two, please say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. Any nays? Okay, those are approved.
Sorry, Mr. Hack, we could have done this with one vote.
Pardon?
We could have done this with one vote.
After all.
Nobody can see we can rush through it, so that's what we did. Our
okay.
Well, you know, we have a new group. We have to go a little bit
that's right.
We slower here.
Item 6C, Certificate of Experience. Julie?
So these items are coming before the board. So currently, we require applicants to submit 3 certificates of experience signed off by a registered professional. And so these are coming before the board because at least one of them is not signed off by a registered professional. It may be a supervisor, but unlicensed. And so under the 32-122-01E, the board may vote to accept the certificates of experience. Qualify for registration.
And staff's recommendation on these 4?
I would recommend to accept.
So on C1, where the exam's taken, he's passed them.
He's right? Taken and passed his exam.
Well, what's the stuff? What's the line below? Like, is there something written there that looks like it's highlighted? I can't. Professor registration, certificates.
I don't have the packet in front of me, but on my memo, if you know, one of his certificates. So basically, all of his certificates are for the same time period. So, and 2 of them are completed by registered professional. So it's really just the one.
So is he a civil right now? What's his registration?
I don't believe he's registered, and this is his initial registration.
You sure?
Yeah, he's applying for registration.
Well, here on number 3, previous professional registrations, certifications, exams taken, Arizona. 2016, 2021.
Oh, that's just listing his exams that he took.
Yeah. These are the certificate experiences, the work experience.
Has he passed them?
He passed his exams.
So what's the question if he's passed the exam?
To accept his certificate of experience that's not signed off by a registered professional.
No, we have 3 folks who are licensed to work under. Two of the 3 are.
2 are, yep.
Okay, so you're recommending approval of all 4 at this
point.
Okay.
And they're all similar to that?
Yep.
They passed the exam, but don't have all of it.
So.
Okay, is there a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the application registration for items C1 through C4.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Green. All those in favor of approving certificates of C1, 2, 3, and 4, please say aye.
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 Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Any nays? Thank you. Okay, council records.
Okay, this one is new. this one is coming before the board, similar to the previous item, the certificates of experience. This applicant's council record shows, if you look at page 1, total number of years of engineering experience, but then under a licensed engineer, it would say, I think this is a 3 years, only 3 years. So again, it's for the board to accept all of her experience in order for her to qualify for registration here.
And has been practicing as a civil engineer in California for 8 years and is currently an active license.
Oh.
Okay, this one seems pretty good. Motion?
Move to accept.
Okay, we have a motion to accept. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor of accepting this council record for Christy Suttage, please say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. Any nays? Okay. On me.
Okay, so 6E1 is a 2-parter. So first to review is to accept, again, his certificate of experience forms. Only 1 out of the 5 he submitted is completed by a registered professional. However, it is still within the same time period. And so first to review and potentially accept that. But Mr. Mesquita is also applied for the exam waiver, the FE exam.
Staff,
so he would like to take the professional exam.
Okay. Pass them. Okay. Still take the PE exam.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Just to waive the fundamentals.
I make a motion to approve item number 6E1.
And can you
say both items in your motion.
Oh, sorry.
To accept the experience and waive the FE.
Okay, I'll make the motion to accept the experience and waive the FE exam for item 6E1 for Bernard.
Authorized to take the PE exam?
Correct.
Okay. Is there a second?
A second.
We have a first and a second. All those in
is
favor?
Is there a PE control exam?
No.
Control system?
Yes.
You mean a specific PE NCAAS? I don't know.
We're giving them authorization for PE control system exam.
There is a control systems exam.
We have that?
I actually have one. No?
Well, it falls under one of those that's offered through NCAAS.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Right. I don't have the list of their specific 16. It could be because there's 24 that they recognize, and some of them fall into the same exam. So
I'm pretty certain there is a control systems exam, professional exam.
There you go.
So we as Arizona accepts NCAAS.
That is who they take their exams through.
Yeah, sure.
That's who we take through.
That's the national
examination.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Association for the engineers.
No.
No.
Same with architecture. It's all natural.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Architects are far.
Yeah, except for our California. Yeah. Some states do have jurisprudence exams.
No, sorry. In kind of landscape.
Well, they take long exams like that.
Did you take us on the I was going to ask you that.
Let's just take a vote just in case.
Just in case, okay. I think there was a motion to recommend approval of the waiver, both parts, the FE exam waiver, accept the certificate of experience, and allow Mr. Mesquita to sit for the PE exam. So we had a motion to approve. We have a second. All those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. Any nays? Motion passes. Okay. On to the good stuff, policy matters.
I have to go.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, there's one enforcement matter that we needed to come back to, right?
6D2.
Ooh, sorry.
Number 6?
5D2.
5.
Oh, Paul Turner, yes.
And just for the record, Ms. Skinky is leaving the meeting at 1 p.m.
Thank you for catching that.
We still have a quorum.
This in case involves case number P22007. Respondent is Paul O'Connor, a registered architect. We've got prior board action on this one. rather than launch into that, could you, Mr. Reem, kind of review how we got here?
Yes, this case started from the alleger who was attempting to construct a patio enclosure for her residence to accommodate a disabled child, and contracted with the respondent in late January for him to produce plans that would result in a permit by the city of Phoenix. And on March 12th, the architect did in fact submit plans to the city planning and development. On, I believe it was May 5th, the city had some red lines, some corrections that were minor in nature, that weren't serious, that needed to be done on the plans. And that's essentially where the issues broke down, in terms of the respondents didn't communicate with the alleger. He wouldn't, and he's acknowledged not responding to emails or phone calls and that kind of thing. So essentially from the point in May all the way until August 26th was when the final revisions were submitted to the City of Phoenix Planning and Development. the complaint was filed several weeks before that time. So the plans, the revised plans, weren't even submitted until after this case was filed, a couple of weeks following that. So this is the issue in this particular case. Although ultimately, I should update you. Ultimately, the plans were approved by the city, and there was when we were here last time before the board, there was an issue on when somebody pays. So the ledger paid the remaining fee, and the plans were turned over. And I've been monitoring that since the last board meeting. All those issues have been resolved. The issue that we brought the case for the board for is on April 28th of 2020, a letter of concern was drafted and sent to the respondent specifically regarding communicating with the client. So that was a previous issue that simply recurred here. And it didn't rise to the level, in my view, of violating the Board's Practice Act. However, it's still an issue in the sense that this type of conduct has recurred again. So in that sense, that's why it's before the board for guidance. So the issue between the two has been effectively resolved, but again, there's this remaining matter of this particular registrant simply just breaking down and just not, and he was completely upfront with me about it because I confronted him with it, and he's admitted to doing so, but he simply has no explanation for doing so. So again, that's why it's before you, because of again the same type of conduct that resulted in a letter of concern previously last year.
Great, thank you, Mr. Reed. I think it was the pattern that got the board concerned, and appreciate the fact that he went and got this resolved. I would think just a letter of concern would be more than adequate in this case.
I would agree.
Hopefully he doesn't come back.
I would recommend that, and frankly, the language would need to be changed to a degree from last time, and I have the last letter, and I think it needs to reflect, because this is essentially this second time this issue has been brought before his attention, and so I'll carefully put the language together to hopefully create a better message so that this doesn't happen a third time.
Very good.
Three strikes, he's out.
I'll make the motion. I'll go ahead and make a motion that we issue a letter of concern to Mr. O'Connor regarding his ability to communicate with his clients.
Second.
Okay, we have a first and a second. All those in favor of issuing a letter of concern, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Any nays? Okay, that's approved. Thank you, Mr. Ream. Okay, I think that completes the enforcement items. On to the good stuff. Policy matters. Judith.
Consent agreement. Agenda.
Yeah, we're...
What?
Number seven.
That's second step.
Oh, yeah. Go.
So, nothing for 7A. There wasn't a long list, so that was just put to the top.
Yeah. See if your name's on here. We always check. I'm always amazed at the length of these cancellations, because you think half the state just disappeared, but we get a bunch of new ones.
Last year, a lot of them did.
Okay, any questions on this? This takes a vote.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda, items 7A and B.
Okay. Is there a second?
Can I just say, if you make a motion regarding all of B, I would have to give everybody an opportunity if they want to pull something out first before you make that motion on everything.
So this is 7B1, right?
So right. And how many had motioned it sound like B as opposed to B1?
Sorry.
Yeah, let's just do 7B1.
Can I? I'm sorry. There was one I wanted to pull out.
Sure.
Just review real quick to make sure I've got the right number. And actually, it wasn't on B1, so we can go ahead and do that.
Okay.
Is this the second for 7A and B1?
There is no 7A. There's just 7.
I'm sorry, the 7 and then...
Just 7B1.
7B1.
Okay. There's 7A. What do you mean?
Because well, 7A, it remained on there, but they... C5E, that's just got pushed up because we have a list. I'm going to say, if they don't have any issues with anything under this consent, then you can make a single motion and boom, the whole thing's done. Just how he had said it, but it's just, I want to make sure that everybody had a chance to pull something out before that was.
But Mr. Green had run.
Meet out of the cancel list.
Not on.
No, out of the whole thing, but maybe the cancel list would be included.
Yeah. B5B is the one I wanted. B5B.
Say
that
again?
I wanted to pull out 7B5B.
Mr. Eric Berry?
Eric Berry?
Yes.
All right, I'm totally confused. The 7B1, this is just the vote motion on the canceled list.
I'm sorry, people were asking me what I wanted to pull out, so I was telling them.
I'm fine
with you.
I apologize, Jack, because I know this is new to you having these consent agenda items, and you don't have to go one by one through these. You could just make a single motion for the entirety of that consent agenda.
Okay, but do we have a second? Mr. Corky already made motion.
Yeah, so I'd have to revise the motion.
So revise your original motion.
Okay, so I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda, the entire agenda, minus item 5B, which is Mr. Eric Berry.
7B5B.
Yes, 7B5B. Sounds like the building code.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second to that?
I'll second.
Thank you. All those in favor of the consent agenda being approved except item 7B5B?
7B5B.
Yes.
Say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Any nays? Thank you. Okay, let's go to 7B5B, Eric Berry.
I really hate to pull this one out because I feel like I'm just quibbling a little bit with staff, but my the memo states that Mr. Berry was convicted of a Class 6 felony. I see a summons, a complaint, and a motion in order to dismiss. I don't actually see a conviction for a felony here. It seems that Mr. Berry's case was deferred and he completed task drug diversion, and therefore there was no conviction. I just wanted to be clear that that's actually what happened.
Okay, and actually Mr. Berry, I believe, is actually on the call.
Okay.
That's correct, I'm here.
Okay. Mr. Berry, is that correct then? There was no conviction against you, it was that your matter was deferred pending task drug diversion?
Correct, yeah. All charges were dismissed through completion of that program.
Okay. All right. I have nothing further on that.
Okay. You want to make a motion then?
Sure. I move to approve Mr. Berry's application for registration as a civil engineer.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Green. Is there a second?
A second.
All those in favor of accepting the registration from Mr. Green, or Eric, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. Any nays? Okay. Mr. Berry, your application for registration civil has been approved. Congratulations. Or accepted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Engineer, just a second ago.
Yeah, I know.
Now,
I've got one profession. I don't need a second one.
Sorry, you can have to take the test then.
Yeah. Policy matters. We went through 8A already. Judith?
So we gave you a list of board meeting dates, and we just need you to say, yay, those look good, and then now we'll schedule them on our website. And
can you remind us what page that's on? 2,500.
3,186.
3,186. Good heavens.
Usually follow the fourth Tuesday of every month, with the exception of no meeting in November and a meeting on maybe the first or second week of December.
Right. So right now our next meeting is going to be December the 6th. Oh, no, that's 22. December the 7th.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, any concerns about any of these dates?
Not yet.
Nope.
Yeah,
there's two I'll have to call in for, but I'll still be able to do this.
Okay. Just need a motion to approve the dates.
I move to approve the dates for next year.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor of approving the board meeting dates for 2022, please say aye.
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 Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Approved.
And then, pursuant to statute, we need to vote on our officers. And actually, we need to vote on all three positions, board chair, vice chair, and secretary, which is supposed to be done annually.
It is, and because of the situation where our board chair, Carl Wyckoff, had left, and Jack was our vice and has been the acting chairperson in that regard, but now we need to have an actual chairperson named and a vice and a secretary.
Seriously, appreciate Jack.
And so obviously the chairperson runs the meetings. If in their stead, the vice chair would take over, and then in their stead, it would be the secretary.
And the secretary's task is?
Since I've been here, no secretary's ever run a meeting, and they usually have maybe an article in the newsletter.
Okay. They don't have to take the notes, right? So.
No. I think they bring coffee.
Actually, I may volunteer for that position so I can get some filter options.
So Carmen was the board chair, Jack was the vice chair, and Clarence McAllister, who's still on the board, is currently the secretary.
He's going to retire.
Sorry?
He's still on, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's serving on an expired term, but he's still.
Helma, Steve, and Clarence are all serving on expired terms. But that doesn't matter. You could be sitting here for years on an expired term.
And it would just be the experience if you guys.
Like Steve, actually, yeah.
And Neil, too.
So.
I guess we would start with nominations. Does anybody nominate?
I move Jack to be the chair.
Yeah.
I second.
Good job, Dave. I second that. So.
My friends.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 There you go. Good deal.
Does it take a formal vote?
Yeah. Mr. Wilson?
Was that the formal
vote? Yes.
Did you say aye?
There it
aye?
Goes.
Yeah. Okay.
Name.
Yes, aye.
Thank
aye.
You.
I move Jack to be the assistant. Sure.
And secretary. Yeah.
We need a vice chair.
How many years of experience did you have?
I've been on the board 3 years. 3 years, I think.
Oh, you want to do it?
All right. Mike just volunteered to be vice chair.
Did I? Okay.
I second.
quick, everybody. You know, you got to go to the bathroom,
okay.
Then we vote.
Yeah, this is happening on pretty quick, so that was motion and.
No, Jack made the motion. Jennifer seconded.
Thank you.
For Mike to be the vice chair.
Mr. Wilson, do you accept that nomination?
Sure.
Great. Hey,
I move that Mr. Wilson be the secretary.
I second.
All those in favor of Mr. Wilson being secretary?
Aye.
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 Done deal.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Sheer excitement there. Good job. Okay. Moving on, item D, vote to appoint board members of the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee.
So in this one, two members of the board are part of the Home Inspector Committee. There are three committee members in the Home Inspector Committee that are home inspectors themselves. So the two board members, one must be an engineer or an architect, and then the other one is. It says in the statute, the public member, because obviously we had only a single public member, but now, as we see it, and I think from staff's outlook, we would like one individual, one public member to kind of be the one to go to these meetings.
I mean, just for continuity, it seems like that would be ideal.
So we hope you agree with that.
And we're low on architects right now.
Okay.
Well, okay.
It could be, we only have a architect and engineer. It has to be one or the other.
Oh, Clarence or?
Or Michael for the one position, and then
and
any of the six for the public.
How often do they meet?
I would say
maybe like four times a year.
3 to 4 times a year. The next meeting is November 16th.
18th.
Thank you.
Will not be in town for that day, but
you can still be the member.
I can still be the member, yeah, I guess.
So
unless Clarence, well, he's not on the call, so
he's currently the sitting member, as it is. I don't know, but he hasn't really appeared.
Right.
I'll do it.
So we need
a motion. Much better. I'd
like somebody making a
motion.
Okay.
We know what you're thinking.
Yes. To have Michael Kleka on.
Kaleka.
As our member for the
Home Inspector
Rules Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Get my committees ready. All those in favor?
Aye.
Wait, who's second?
We need a second, sorry.
I'll second.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. All those in favor of this nomination, say aye, please.
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. Any nays?
No. Me?
No. Standards Committee?
We need a public member.
Okay.
You have absentees you can vote in.
Can you quickly review what the Standards Committee does for our public members?
Is there an example of it?
Basically, all of the rules, statutes, anything to do with the home inspector industry, usually the discussion begins there. Mm-hmm. We have lots of Q&A from the public as well as the stakeholders, home inspector stakeholders that go to that meeting. They cannot make final determinations regarding anything. They can only make recommendations as they come up to the board.
Everything's brought to the board.
Correct. Okay. Example would be right now they are going through and trying to update their standard, which is about 20 years old, and that's going to require going through the rulemaking process, so they're trying to finalize that. When they get to that point, they'll be moved to here, and if you guys like it, then it'll go to GIRC.
No, if you guys like it, then we ask the governor's office,
right,
please may we open a rule package, and if they say yes,
then
it goes.
So just an example of what's...
I'll volunteer.
Great, thank you.
Do we still need a motion to be volunteers?
Yes.
Yes.
Somebody nominate.
I would like to nominate Mr. Green to be on the Standards Committee.
Okay.
I agree. Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Green. Okay. Plan the December holiday party. We do this every year in December. And we give money to Judith, and they'll go set up a luncheon here. We, as all the board members come, and normally it'll happen like after our session, and they'll go, we'll have a great feast, and it's a chance to meet the staff here, and for them to meet you guys.
I think I attended 2 years ago or 3 years ago. It was a good one.
So, yeah, we've done it every year. I think it's good for the staff and good to meet and start to recognize people. So, do we have a financial...
I wasn't here last Christmas, so this is new to me.
It didn't happen last Christmas either.
Oh, yeah, last Christmas COVID killed everything, so 2 years.
If I recall, I think it was like $50.
$50.
That was given to Melissa. She would just purchase like whatever. Staff would kind of identify which catering service they wanted. And then she would collect the monies from the board members at whatever time, and she would just pay swipe her credit card.
Delivered or something.
Right, it gets delivered, and it's usually would be set up in here because our board meetings would be over there, so that has to be figured out, so I presumably in the office. It has to be agendized on our agenda because you guys would be together. So
no meeting would be,
gotcha.
No business would be conducted, but there would be a quorum present.
Right. Kind of thing. We try to keep the agenda short in December specifically so we can have that time. Does always go as planned, but you know, we try.
Yeah, I need time too for the alcohol to wear off too.
So,
we can do it. We do it outside. Is there room to set up tables?
We roughly have 23 staff members, including ourselves.
That's just an idea,
and we're going to cover all that with $50
piece.
Oh, a piece. Oh, God. I'm sorry. I thought it was 50 total. I'm like, yeah, what are we getting?
Cookies.
Cookies.
Hot dogs.
Maybe got four more.
Oh, that's different.
Beanie weenies.
But yeah, we wanted to bring it to you because we didn't want to make the presumption that you guys may or may not want to be doing this, so it would be something for you to discuss, and we can keep continuing to do it.
Good for morale.
Or not. Yeah, right? So, yeah. You know what?
Great. Let's do this. All right. You need a motion?
No. It's more direction for us, I think.
Yeah. Let's pursue
December
this.
7th, right?
Well, it has to be agendized. Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, December 7th.
But it follows our regular session.
So it'll be on December 7th.
Including every square composition.
We'll put in more information in the agenda.
Yeah, it's going to be on the agenda.
Will that be an executive session at that point?
No. Definitely open to the public.
Don't tell what food's offered.
Director's report.
Everything is very spelled out for you guys. Let's see. We can talk about anything you want to.
Yeah, if you guys have questions.
I'm going to hang out here. I will. I would like to say, the budget's there. Everything's there for you. Feel free to ask me anything you want. Digitization. We are just so close. If you'll notice, like in our executive session room and all, I mean, we are wall to wall cabinets. We are so close.
Is it 1.4 million pieces
of paper and microfiche that we are going to digitize and get rid of all those? So it's very exciting. We're very excited. So I leave it on there to just kind of keep updating as it goes.
But the process has started. You're well into it.
No, because
I thought that's your employment.
This is government. Nothing works that quickly. We have to go through many an agency and get everybody's approval.
But we do have an idea of which vendor we want to use for sure, I think. And
we do, and we didn't get quite the funding that, but we think we can manage. So we're just trying to make extra sure before we say go. And the board composition. I just really wanted to say just how grateful we all are for the board members that have served and. And I put in here, I just want to extend our sincere gratitude and appreciation to the board members who have recently been released from their responsibilities. Carmen Wyckoff did an amazing job navigating the meetings. It's not easy, and just really appreciate her. And Neil Jones, who served for over 7 years as our as another architect. Carmen was architect, so was Neil Jones. Dr. Angel served for more than 9 years as a civil engineer. His expertise clearly was invaluable to this board. Working with him has been a joy and a privilege. And our public member, Andy Everode, who served more than 5 years, just such gratitude for the time and energy that these individuals took and put into studying the matters and coming prepared. And it's not easy, and you're certainly not doing it for the money, right? For the glory. So just really appreciate these people so much. And certainly are grateful for our new members. Welcome our new members. We've got Dr. Campbell, not with us right now, Jennifer, we're really grateful. She has experience serving previously on the homeopathic board, right? So that's wonderful. And Colleen Lindgren, who's not with us today, but will be, she's been in communication with us with had a family issue she needed to take care of. Kent Wilson, it's been a pleasure to meet him. Grateful for his expertise. He's got a lot of knowledge in governmental affairs. And Aaron Green and Stacy, who left, who are both attorneys. So that's going to be excellent to have on board with us as public members. And our new professional architect, Michael. Can we call you Mike?
Mike, yeah.
Okay.
If you're only if I'm in trouble, then you can use Michael.
Really grateful that he's willing to be here with us. So if you don't have any other specific questions, since it's all spelled out in your packet, clearly I don't think I'm going to take any more time on the director's reports.
So you have three people that are beyond their term. Is there any action on that?
Nope. haven't heard anything new. I don't usually hear anything until a letter lands on my desk saying so somebody's come or gone.
Good for another three.
Shooting for the world record.
I do know that people have applied. I don't know what boards and commissions is doing with anybody that's applied. I do know people have applied for many various positions because they'll reach out to me and say, I applied. I don't hear anything, or I don't know what's going on. I'm like, I'm so sorry to hear. I don't have anything to do with it. So just direct them back to boards and commissions. But anyway, that's pretty much it for me.
No board chair report,
Jack.
No AAG report.
Standing committees, we'll have that. The next home inspector rules and standards committee meeting on November 18th. So we'll make sure and send Aaron at the Google invite for that.
No preference if I attend remote for that one.
Hybrid.
We always like to have you face here in person.
I
do what you
that.
Have to do.
Pretty close to Thanksgiving. That's the only thing I'm
is that a holiday? Is it a holidays?
It's getting close.
We don't have a date yet for the next laws and rules or L&R committee meeting.
Yeah, usually wait for the Q&A to kind of pile up before we set a date.
Yeah.
Well, this is a good opening session for you guys.
Yeah.
This is a kind of a unique day.
Not to add too many things, do we need to, if we're going to add something to the agenda or suggest that something be added to the agenda, do we need to do it the meeting immediately prior, or can we say a couple meetings out we should take care of something?
We can just say future meeting.
Okay. Okay. Because at least looking at it today, two items just sort of popped into my head. There was that discussion about home alarm inspection and the lack of rules, maybe in January or February.
Can you hold that thought just
sorry.
One more minute till we get to that future?
Sorry.
Agenda.
Well, that is actually on there. Okay.
So we do have that, actually. So for item number 13, this is our association reports, which, so a week ago, I had a wonderful time with a bunch of geologists at the ASBOG meeting.
Wonderful.
Little Rock. Yeah.
It's partying pretty well, don't you?
It's exciting times at ASBOG. did you want to make any comments about any of that conference, Steve?
Got a real nice mug.
I brought Steve back his goodie bag from ASBOG. He made me the voting delegate for that, so I had to be alert and pay attention. And I actually wrote down a whole bunch of things, but I don't know how much you guys want to hear. I imagine you're probably tired at this point. So just the highlights real quick. They're very excited to move to computer-based testing, and this is huge. And our licensing committee here, team here, is doing the happy dance because ASBOG, we've been facilitating the exam twice a year for them, like their national exam. And it's a huge commitment, and it's a lot of work for the licensing team. So it's overdue. It's going to be great for everybody for them to move to that CBT testing, and they're going to have locations all over the world, and it'll be so much easier for the candidates. But it was really impressive. I had a good time listening to so many people. These industries, because I'm relatively new to this board, fascinate me because you have the major examination associations associated with each profession, but within each profession, for instance, with the geologists, we had representatives from the Association of Environmental and Engineering Geologists, AEG, Association of Professional Geologists, APG, American Association of Petroleum Geologists, AAPG, Association of American State Geologists, AASG, and the American Geosciences Institute, AGI, all represented and speaking. So, you know, I was taking notes and just trying to soak it all up. It was great. They talked a lot about continuing education. Here's the only other thing, and I won't bore you with the rest, but so Arizona, when I got to this board, one of the things I was blown away with is that the professionals have no continuing education here. Because I didn't hardly know of an occupational board where there's no continuing education required. I'm like, what? For any of the professions. like, okay, well, just for, I think it was the American Geosciences Institute that did a study, and they said in their national survey that they conducted that 58% of the respondents, the registered geologists that responded, wanted and valued continuing education. And then with their demographics of the people that responded, if they took out the more seasoned, veteran, older group, then the percentages jumped up to 75% that wanted continuing education. And I thought that was fascinating. And also that educationally, nationally, only 23% of STEM students, and everybody knows what STEM is, science, technology, engineering, and math, students actually go on to work in a STEM occupation. And their rationale for that, they said that they think that they get into the basic sciences STEM core classes, and then they are dazzled by the thought of medicine, law, or getting an MBA, and so they don't stay with the STEM. So that was their take on it, anyway.
It's because it's harder.
So it was great. It was a great experience. I don't think we really have a report. Jack and I both reported on the Landscape Architects Association last month because they just had their annual convention in Phoenix. And then NCARB for the architects. The only thing I had really to report on that is that they're migrating their computer-based testing between businesses from Prometric, who ironically the geologists are going to PSI, and they just feel like it will work out better.
Judith, they NCARB reached out to me, so I have a call with their member liaison next week. So just to kind of get me
good.
In the loop on all that.
So. Yeah, they're wonderful. All these associations have been great to reach out to me and help offer anything. They are very conscious or conscientious about diversity, equity, and inclusion, DEI, particularly within their volunteer community, the volunteer groups within NCARB, and also exploring their future licensing models. Those are their big goals right now. And the board of directors is exploring the relationship between architecture and interior design credentialing from multiple perspectives, beginning with a robust discussion on findings from a joint study conducted by NCARB and the Council for Interior Design Qualification, CDIQ, comparing required competencies and exam objectives for the credentials offered by both of these organizations. So Arizona does not license or register interior designers. This is definitely a kind of a hot topic in the regulatory world throughout the nation. The report suggests areas of strong similarity and competency expectations, but does not suggest that the expertise or services provided to the public are interchangeable. They will release the full report later this year, I believe. And current statistics have 30 U.S. jurisdictions right now that are regulating interior design in some form. That's fairly significant. And I just provided we try to always provide state reports and updates for all of these associations with our numbers and licenses. The only thing I have for NCWES, for our engineers, is that I will be submitting a report that we just need the board chair to sign, basically moving Dr. Angel to an emeritus status. It's just basically an acknowledgement that he's not a current active board member and moving him off. But since the board chair will need to sign it, I just wanted to make you aware of that. And that's all. So now we've got future topics.
After having
topics.
Jumped the gun for about the 50th time tonight. That's right, I got one too, so don't
count. Yeah, so that comment earlier about not having set rules and apparently some industry confusion about home alarm inspection is troublesome. I take it would be a considerable effort to I guess would we be talking
I don't know where we're starting. I don't know what the current status of the field is. If we're moving towards trying to get rules to be made for that field, I think we should get the lay of the land first. And so I would suggest either January or February, perhaps have a meeting with public comment.
I think we would probably want to start at the Laws and Rules Committee meeting.
Okay. So we would start there.
And then what was the other thing?
The other thing was perhaps getting some input from staff out of future data as to mechanisms for how do I put it? I mean, there were two agenda items today that disturbed me, in that there were apparently registrants who were either untruthful or potentially submitted false information to the board. And I'm thinking in particular the one we referred back to the EAC. And so perhaps a staff, and perhaps some commentary from Scott would be useful as to what mechanisms we have to either penalize or compel, or penalize untruthful behavior and submissions to inspectors. You know, if there aren't any such mechanisms, what mechanisms we might be able to create through rulemaking.
Well, that's under future agenda items, we can certainly talk about that.
Would you want that as an AAG report, possibly?
I might be able to do it as an AAG report. It also may be something, if you'd like to reach out to me directly outside of the meeting, if you have specific questions about an area, that I may be able to point you in the direction, or we could set it up for a full board discussion, depending upon what questions board members may have.
I think those mechanisms are in place.
Yeah, there are a couple of different things there, but yeah, we can definitely set that for an agenda item and as well.
And I'll reach out to you by email. That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have one addition, if possible. The whole discussion you just mentioned about continuing education, and so Arizona, I think we're one of two states in the country that doesn't provide continuing education requirements for architects. The nice thing is that NCARB and AIA, which is our American Institute of Architects, has the mechanisms to monitor and administer that. It doesn't cost us anything to do it. But I'd like to have a conversation, maybe it starts in the Rules Committee, about potentially bringing that conversation up for discussion. You know, the average is about 8 to 12 hours a year of continuing education. And then it's just like, since we're on a 3-year cycle for architecture licenses here in Arizona, that would mean anywhere from 24 to 36 hours of continuing education. I think it's really helpful to, you know, provide that, because it just gives architects the opportunity to continue to learn and do better. And this field is always changing, technology is changing, so it's an opportunity to do that. And like I said, every other state's pretty much got it. We're one of the few that doesn't. I'd really like to see us try to incorporate that if we can. So again, something to talk about in future meetings.
I think that's before the LNR committee.
Like I said, the mechanism's already set up, so it's super easy. We just have to say, yes, we want to do this.
And our committee chairperson is Edward Marley, so I'm sure he probably
knows. Yep, I know Edward.
Yeah,
so.
It's a good place to start.
Yeah. Okay. I'll reach out to him.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I think that fulfills the agenda for today. With any further ado, I'd like to adjourn the session today. Thank you guys for coming.
Thanks for having it so much.
Indeed.
Yeah, where's the gavel?
Bam.
Yeah.
You're done. Thank you.
When you see a high gavel.
I didn't. Yeah, I was like, just add the whole sentence.